Good Monday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by our friends at Nosler. And today and tomorrow, in fact, all week long, sponsored as well by our friends at Adcor Defense, our on-location sponsor for 2016. And we are indeed on location in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex, where the Great American Outdoor Show is in day number 3. It is in full swing, a great crowd on a sunny day in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Had fantastic turnout on the opening weekend as well. Even the even that big football game didn't get in the way of a lot of folks coming out yesterday and enjoying themselves in Harrisburg. Listen, we've got a fantastic program for you. We've got a lot of guests coming up. Lee and Tiffany from The Crush with Lee and Tiffany on Outdoor Channel going to join us a little bit later on in the hour. Our friend Ron Bellin of Reaper Outdoors, a retired Navy SEAL, going to join us later in the hour. Jeff Axelson of Axelson Tactical will be with us as well. Matt Axelson's brother, plus Will Jimeno, a former Port Authority Police Department officer. You may remember that name if you saw the movie World Trade Center starring Nicolas Cage. Will was one of the Port Authority officers trapped in the rubble of the World Trade Center for more than 13 hours before he and his sergeant were pulled out of the rubble. 37 Port Authority officers lost their lives on 9/11, and we'll talk with Will Jimeno about that coming up next hour. Chris Cox, NRA ILA's executive director, next hour as well. Benny Spies, our friend from South Dakota. Yes, he's here in Harrisburg, too. Host of Gun It with Benny Spies on the Sportsman Channel. Plus, we've got the Hero Deal, good guy of the day, coming up in hour 3. Katie Moyer, who is a political writer from right here in the Pennsylvania area, talking about campus carry. And Chris Brackett, from the host of Arrow Affliction, presented by Mossy Oak and Outdoor Channel. Matt Moret with Zinc Calls, talking turkey, coming up in hour 3 as well. Plus, we've got all of the day's top Second Amendment stories for you. And I am really, really pleased that we can kick off our coverage of the Great American Outdoor Show here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. But talking with Matt Jakes, I got the name wrong, didn't I?
It's Jakes.
Jakes.
You were super
there
close.
There we go. Super close with AmericanSnipers.org. But as you know, when you're talking to a sniper, close isn't good enough, right? You got to be spot on. Listen, Matt, I appreciate you coming on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what can you tell us about the organization, AmericanSnipers.org? What is the mission of this group?
Sure. We've been around since shortly after the global war on terror kicked off. It was started by Brian Sane down in Texas. He was he's a cop, you know, just like most of us that are on staff. A lot of the guys that were in the military got out. Obviously, post 9/11 war kicks off. A lot of those guys get called back into the reserves. They get over there and they find that a lot of the stuff that they had here stateside, things that made their job a little easier as a law enforcement sniper, things like that. Now they're back into a military role over there, and they're saying, "Man, I wish I had, you know, X, Y, Z, this trinket that really helps that job." So they reached out to Brian and said, "Hey, you know," and I want to say the first piece was like a laser rangefinder or something like that, or
okay,
a better optic. So they reached out to Brian, and he said, "You know what? I can't afford this. I'm a beat cop. You know, I don't have the money for this." So he started soliciting businesses in his jurisdiction, saying, "Hey, you know, there's a buddy of mine. He's overseas. He needs a better piece of gear. You know, can you help me out?" So he raised the money. Plenty of people thought that there was a viable need for that. So he raised the money, got that piece of gear, sent it to him, and he's like, "Man, I got this leftover money. What am I supposed to do? This isn't my money.
Right?
What do I do with this leftover money?" So that quickly snowballed. I mean, as the military picked up, they started the EBR project, which was a, you know, modified M14. A lot of those guys were getting a modified chassis. They had one magazine, barely any optics for them, you know, no mag pouches, just a lot of stuff that those guys, they're such a specialized unit within the United States military, and everybody would think, well, that's kind of ridiculous. Why is there, how can they not get the stuff that they need?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes there's better trinkets that the military's slow in developing and accepting, and we, as most of us are retired or current law enforcement snipers, we understand when they say, "Hey, you know, this piece of gear, you know, this is what we need." So we solicit donations in different venues. We're all volunteer organization. All of us take time off from our day-to-day jobs to go out and none of us get anything out of it. We take vacation time, and Mark Hartwell and I are here for the week, and we got a couple of guys coming in for relief because we all have to get back to our day jobs, but it's truly a labor of love. I mean, we've been 12 years. Every year we have a new challenge coin. We make a killing from the people that support us and support the cause.
And I'm guessing that as guys retire from the military, As they come back home, they're getting involved in the organization as well, right?
Correct. We have a couple of guys that are on staff that were early on. They were guys that were beneficiaries of everything that we were doing here. So it's, we are. There's a bunch of us that were spread all over the country. There isn't a schoolhouse in any of the branches of service that don't know. I live very close to Quantico, so I can go up to the Marine Corps schoolhouse and talk to those guys if they've got a leadership course or they've got a basic school going through. I can go in, swag them down, make sure that they know exactly how to get in touch with us. And it's not a, there's a vetting process these guys have to go through. You can't just get on the internet and send us an email saying, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'm a sniper and I need this gear. That's not how it works. We have, you know, there's a vetting process. They fill out a form and then we do our due diligence to make sure that they're, what branch of service they're in, where they went to their school, who their commanding officer is, what unit they're in, and when they're going. Once we get all that vetted, then it's, as long as it's not ITAR restricted, it's game on. We'll get them whatever they need.
That is awesome. And again, I mean, as you say, we'd like to think that the government is going to step up and give these guys what they need, but, well, we all know that the government doesn't always operate at 100% effectiveness, unfortunately, Matt. And so, you know, we do have to step up and take up the slack and you're doing that. And one of the ways that you're doing this, I'm wearing the challenge coin for 2016 right here. And folks can go to AmericanSnipers.org, and they can order not just this year's challenge coin, but you've got challenge coins going back several years that they can order. And again, the proceeds all go to benefit these snipers who are serving right now.
Absolutely. It's kind of one of the things that we're known for in the shows we travel around. Every year, at the beginning of the year, we debut a new coin. And it's for years. It's gotten to we have a tremendous following. There's guys that'll, you know, we caused kind of a we'll call it a fire marshal issue 2 years ago, 3 years ago at SHOT Show, where they actually came to the booth and said, "Look, you guys can't be in the booth this early, and you can't uncover anything until 10 o'clock because there were so many people that would flow in, and one of the first places on their ticket on Tuesday morning was to come see us." And so yeah, if you go to AmericanSnipers.org, that's snipers with an S. .org, you can get all of the coins from the past on there. There's PVC. There's all sorts of swag on there that is sniper and long gun related. We have raffles on there. We've got a super raffle right now. Recoil magazine.
Yeah, you do have a super raffle right now. I was looking at this. The Anorexia rifle, right?
That is correct.
Man, this is awesome.
The Recoil magazine had actually assembled that rifle and they with all the components, everything from optics to bipod, the whole thing. A couple of guys ran it through a class. It's a very well put together rifle, and we were the beneficiaries. The Recoil reached out to us and said, "Hey, you know, we're looking for somebody to give this to, and who better to benefit from the proceeds of this raffle than AmericanSnipers.org?" So we graciously accepted that, and it's running through May. So I encourage people to get on, you know, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Go to the website, buy the tickets. $10 a ticket. For a tremendous package.
I'm looking here. MSRP on the rifle package exceeds $7,250. And again, correct. This rifle was donated. You didn't have to pay for it.
No.
That means that every $10 raffle ticket, that's $10 towards a guy in the field.
That is correct.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
We've been around when people stop and they say, "Well, you know, are you sure?" There's, you know, when I try and pick a donation, a place to put that money and donate. Now, obviously, it's a very worthwhile thing to do your due diligence. Say, "Hey, I'm going to give you $20. Where does that money go?" You know, most of us, I travel a lot during my day job, so I have a lot of Hilton Honors points. So when I came here I got a hotel room that I paid for in my points. So that's no money out of the organization. We don't pay for fuel back and forth. If there's guys that, like, if there was a guy coming from the West Coast out here, we'll try and reimburse him for his airline ticket. But there's a huge, and it's you can't walk the floor in any of these tactical shows or farms related shows and find a company when they say, "If these guys said you support them, we've got huge supporters and a great reputation."
And so let's talk about that for a second, if we can, because you know we hear a lot of people. In fact, I saw a story today from somebody who is obviously anti-gun. Went to SHOT Show. I think he wrote about this for a Salon magazine, Salon.com, and it was what you would expect.
Right.
But let's talk about what you see within the industry and the heart that you see within the industry. Because, as you say, you know, look, these companies, they could turn you down. They could say, "Get back to us in 6 months. We'll see what our budget's like." But has the industry actually opened their doors and opened their hearts to these guys and your mission at AmericanSnipers.org?
Yeah, they have, 100%. It's, like I said, a lot of us are either in the industry or have been, and we've had contact with them from SHOT Show and military shows and things like that our day jobs take us to. so they know that they know who we're involved in. And there's optics companies, you know, Night Force Leupold, Kestrel Wind Meters. There are so many companies out there that do huge amounts of favors for us. I mean, we can Kestrel Wind Meters, for one, if you go onto our website and you click through and they show that click through came from our website and you buy a wind meter, we get huge discounts on those things. And in some cases, they end up giving us one because we're a 501c3 nonprofit. All of that paperwork is visible on the website. You can go there and, you know, so if you make a donation, you go there and get your, you know, we can send you a receipt. You can print out that paperwork for your taxes and stuff. But from the industry as a whole, that's the part of the, I'm kind of famous for saying that there's certain reasons why it's called an industry and not a community. But in this instance, it's a community. The long gun guys and the companies that are in the business of long gunning and supporting and building those products, you'd be really hard pressed to find a company that doesn't know who we are and doesn't support us. There's a tremendous amount of support for us.
That is awesome. So again, AmericanSnipers.org are going to be here at the Great American Outdoor Show through February 14th. And then you're also going to be at the NRA annual meeting coming up in Louisville in May, right?
Absolutely. The NRA is, you know, we just started this relationship with the NRA last year at the annual meeting. Huge support. We can't thank the NRA enough for everything they've done for us. Between annual meeting and here, this is a, if you will, it's a segment of the population that may not know who we are. You know, they may not read about us in that certain social media aspect or in the magazines and things like that. So there's an educational portion that goes along with it. There's a lot of people are stopping by saying, hey, what exactly are you guys about? So it's, we're educating them and it's a huge help. So we're extremely grateful for the NRA and for you guys and for, you know, for you having me on the show so we can help spread the word.
Well, listen, man, you've got a microphone whenever you want it. I know that, again, you've got the raffles going on. May 22nd is when the raffle is going to be drawn. So we'll be talking with you, you know, throughout the spring and reminding folks that this is going on. And we'll certainly have you on the show in Louisville. And, you know, you're not too far away from Farmville. So anytime you want to come down and spend an afternoon with us and talk again about the mission of American Snipers and not just the organization, but the snipers themselves, because, you know, probably most Americans, I mean, the only experience that we have with snipers is the movie American Sniper about Chris Kyle, right?
Right.
But I know that, you know, the mission that these guys are on, I mean, you said every branch of the service has a sniper or snipers in it, right?
Correct. It's snipers or designated long men, long gun guys of you know, DDMs, DMs. Any of that, if they're a military unit and they can be vetted through the channels that we're known in, then it's like I said, if it's not ITAR restricted, then they get it. You know, it's we're almost like them writing home to mom and dad saying, hey, you know, it's this kind. You know, I wish I had this or wish I had that. And if you know, mom and dad don't have that money, they can turn to us. So they we do everything we can to get into those schoolhouses and let those new guys going out. And let them know. And it's nice now because it's been 12 years in the building. So now there's guys that are out there that are company commanders, you know, or senior NCOs, staff NCOs that know. They're like, hey, no. And we've got guys that and all we ask those guys to do is turn over the next unit that's coming in to take over for them. Hey, that when the next crew gets there, mm-hmm. turn it over. If it becomes unserviceable or broken or lost on a mission somewhere, let us know. We'll try and replace all that.
Have you guys ever had any grief from the brass, you know, upper echelons of the military, saying, "Hey, you're making us look bad here," saying, "You know, we gotta fill in the gaps here," or are they supportive of the mission as well?
There are some that are supportive, and then there's some that I got into a little bit of a quasi-heated confrontation with a lieutenant colonel and said that it was preposterous to think that snipers weren't taken care of in the military. And that it was this particular person said that there was no way that was, and it, standing in the booth with me at that point in time was a former Marine scout sniper that served in Fallujah and said, hold on, sir, hold on a second, and I'm here to tell you firsthand account that this is a 100% legitimate organization, and it has helped us out, and it has helped a lot of us overseas. So it was luckily for me, he was standing there. I was when I was in the Marine Corps, I wasn't a long gun guy in the Marine Corps, and I was in long before the global war on terror kicked off. But he was standing next to me. He's like, negative, stand down. This is 100% legit, and it's a viable organization that helps us out.
Well, listen, we appreciate everything that you do. We're glad to be a part of it, and we're glad to help out any way that we can. Matt, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Hope we can do it again soon.
Absolutely.
And again, make sure you check out americansnipers.org. That's the website for americansnipers.org. Lee and Tiffany Lukoski of The Crush with Lee and Tiffany are going to join us after a quick timeout. So stick around. We are just getting started here on this edition of NRA News Cam & Company from the Great American Outdoor Show at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
I'm speaking with Sergeant Major Lance Nutt. He's president and founder of Sheepdog Impact Assistance. Tell us what Sheepdog Impact Assistance is all about.
Well, when we refer to the term of sheepdog, it's referring to one of society's protectors. It's the men and women that serve in the military, law enforcement, fire and rescue ranks. It's that type of man or woman that's willing to put their life on the line for you and me, for everyday service and the things that we live and take for granted. It takes a unique individual to go out there and make sure that we're able to appreciate the freedoms that exist for us. And when we talk about society's protectors, it's truly its sheepdogs, those men and women willing to give it all.
So where did this concept come from?
Well, for us and myself as a Marine of 28 years, it was quickly understanding with multiple deployments under my back and so many of my own Marines and soldiers and sailors that I had served with, seeing the difficulties they had in returning home. Part of that was that continued service opportunity. When you step away from something that means so much to you and having given so much of your life in service, we felt that we needed an organization that would give you that opportunity to continue giving back to your country. And we initially formed as a disaster response organization and have morphed into so much more that truly defines who and what we are as individuals, our members and our volunteers, but more importantly, we're making sure that those men and women that have suffered a traumatic injury, and that could be emotional or physical trauma, that we give them the opportunity to get up off their butts and continue to live their lives.
It's awesome. Sergeant Major Lance Nutt with Sheepdog Impact Assistance. How can we get more information about your wonderful organization?
Well, we encourage people to visit our website at www.sheepdogia.org, and that's that'll give them an opportunity to learn a lot more about what we're accomplishing and how we're helping these men and women continue on with their lives.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Speaking with Mike Christensen with Pass It On Outdoor Mentors. Mike, welcome back to NRA News. You've got something neat going on for the new year, the 2016 Gun a Week drawing. What is it all about?
John, this is one of our big fundraisers for the year. Beginning the first Wednesday in March, we're going to give away a gun every week for 52 weeks. At the end of those 52 weeks, everybody who didn't win a gun will go into a drawing. And then we also take all of the winners and put them in a drawing, so somebody is guaranteed to win two guns out of this drawing.
Two guns. That sounds like a good deal. So this is for Pass It On Outdoor Mentors. Let's tell folks what it is that you guys do.
John, we're working to give kids who don't have a chance to get outdoors that opportunity. We're taking kids who are served by organizations like Big Brothers and Big Sisters and other youth mentoring organizations an opportunity to get out, learn to hunt and fish and shoot, and enjoy the great outdoors that we all know and love.
That is so awesome. So how do folks get involved in this drawing?
They can go to outdoormentors.org and click on the Gun a Week drawing link on the front page and get signed up right there.
That is so good. Before we run out of time, once again, it's the 2016 Gun a Week drawing. Tickets are available now. Start drawing first Wednesday in March. And, Mike, I got about 30 seconds left. Tell folks why it's so important to get involved with an organization like yours. Why do you do what you do?
There are too many kids today who are never going to have a chance to go hunting and fishing unless those of us who love the outdoors step up and make that happen. And that's what outdoor mentoring is all about.
All right. Once again, it's the 2016 Gun a Week drawing. Tickets available now. How do folks get those tickets again, Mike?
Outdoormentors.org. Click on the link right there on the front page.
All right. So you're starting the drawing first Wednesday in March. Go there now and get information and find out more information about this great group, Pass It On Outdoor Mentors. Mike Christensen, thank you, sir, for what you do, and thank you for being on NRA News. You have a good one.
Welcome back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and the Great American Outdoor Show. And NRA News Cam & Company coming to you live from the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. I am excited to be here, and I am excited to have with us on the program from The Crush, Lee and Tiffany. How are you both?
Doing great.
We are awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on the program. We were just checking out the live deer cam at the crush.tv, and a little bit of snow there for you, right?
But, a little bit of snow.
Yeah, it's. I wish we had more. That's probably the first snow we've had since last year. It's just, you know, out here it seems like everybody has snow, but in Iowa, you know, normally you have snow this time of year, and we haven't had any. It's been so warm, just weird weather.
It was, you know, it was a really weird December, like up through January, you know, in the East Coast, too. We had 70-degree days at Christmas. We were wearing shorts on Christmas and New Year's Eve, and then New Year's rolled around, all of a sudden it got cold. So maybe it's actually returning to normal. And you'll get a little bit of snow here in Harrisburg, because I think we're supposed to get...
Yeah, I think we are tonight.
Somewhere, you know.
Like, that's what I've heard.
Yeah, 6 inches, 4 to 8, somewhere around there. So you'll get your taste of snow.
Yes,
but it doesn't help
it.
When we have to work. It's like, it's not like we can be outside enjoying it.
I know, right? Well, we'll just have to take breaks. Run outside, have a snowball fight, maybe build a snowman, you know? So this is not your first time at the Great American Outdoor Show, is it? Or is it?
No,
gosh. It's been
coming for years.
Before we had our show.
Yeah.
Back before it was the Great American Outdoor Show.
Yep. And like I said, well before we had our show now, The Crush, and even before we had Getting Close.
So what is it like to now be here as personalities, quote unquote? When before, you know, before you had the show and you're just coming as attendees and looking around, I'm guessing it's got to be a really cool experience, even if it means you have to walk a little bit slower and you're stopping to talk to more people. I'm guessing it must be really fun.
Yeah, for me personally, it was more fun before we had the show, because you walk around all day and you could look at all the stuff and talk to people and look at all the mounts and through the outfitter hall. Now we just have our own booth, so you're sitting in your booth most of the day, so we don't get to see everything like you used to, except for like before the show or after, we get to walk around a little bit. But not like we used to be able to. So it's fun in the sense that you get to meet so many people. And we you know, like I said, we've been coming here for 10 or 12 years. You've made so many friends, and so many people come by to see us that we've been seeing and talking to for years. And it's great to see your friends, but you don't really get to see the show as much as you used to before we had our
It probably saves us a lot of money, because I tell you what, if I could walk around and purchase stuff all day long, I would be in my glory. I am a gear junkie.
There's all kinds of gear here, everything you could possibly want.
See, I vicariously shop when people come by our line. I'm like, hey, did you see that? I'm like, why is
where
they got that?
Right?
But, of course, here the show is so big, so it's like legitimately I'm like, okay, what hall, what number? You got to be pretty specific on where they're actually at.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it really, for folks who haven't been here before, I mean, this is not your typical gun show, right?
No.
I mean, this is everything. You know, we, in fact, a lot of us were in Las Vegas for the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor trade show not long ago. That's an industry trade show. It's not open to the public. This is, to my mind anyway, the closest equivalent to the public SHOT Show, because you have the shooting sports hall.
Right.
You have fishing. You have tents. You have everything for the outdoors. You've got hundreds of outfitters in the next hall over from us. You could book your hunt really anywhere that you wanted to go, from Pennsylvania to Patagonia. You know, you can find a hunt, and it's all here under one complex.
Right. It's bigger than the SHOT Show, you know, because they don't have outfitters and all that at the SHOT Show. You've got basically everything here that's at the SHOT Show minus the... You know, plus you got the outfitters and everything else here too. So it's unbelievable. It's hard to explain when people ask. You know, it's not like any other deer show or sports show. It's you just got to come and see it.
And you know, it's nice because you talk about the people who are stopping by your booth. I think that's my favorite part of being here, is just getting a chance to talk with people, because inevitably you just meet the coolest people with the greatest stories.
Yeah,
right?
You're absolutely right, because you know, a lot of times we'll be like, we're going out to Harrisburg for, I don't know, I guess we're out here for almost 12 days, and people are like, you're going to be out there for 12 days? And I'm like, there's not a day that goes by that you don't meet somebody that seriously makes a lasting impact on you, that you're like, do you remember that person we talked to? And you actually like discuss it. It's like every day it's something different, and like I said, every day you meet somebody that makes a big impact in your life.
And you really, you know, you start to understand that it is an industry, but it's more than an industry.
It's more than an industry.
It's a family.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely is. And that's what's so cool about hunting. I mean, you know, for us, like, we've noticed such a drastic change in who's in our line and what type of hunter they actually are. You know, when we first started, we went from a lot of, they didn't hunt. You know, we ask everybody, where do you live? Do you hunt? How was your season? You know, things like that. And it used to be all the women and the kids, of course, and, you know, even the little boys, and no hunt. And now it's like, oh, my gosh, how many women did we have already come through our line today?
Oh, yeah, in 10 years, like, so it used to be mostly just guys that came through and talked to you about hunting. And now just the young girls and the wives, we have, you know, more women that come through than men now, at least sales on our shirts and stuff like that. It's the women's stuff is always our best sellers and stuff every year. It's amazing to see, and just... and the time span that we've had our show in the 12 years, how it's changed, how many women are and young girls there shooting deer and their first deer, and you know every year they're coming back and showing us all these pictures, and it's amazing to see how many women are into hunting now.
Well, y'all are too humble to probably acknowledge this, but I think your show is a big reason, one of the big reasons why we're seeing this. I think you all have had a cultural impact on people. And I think that, you know, you look at women like yourself, Eva Shockey, Jana Waller, Melissa Bachman, you know, you can now rattle off a good list of names of women who have been hunting and who have been, had that exposure. And are helping to highlight the fact that, look, this is for everybody, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. Like I said, I would never say. I just go on what
I'll
we
see
and
stuff.
I'll say
it for you.
But it's been a huge, huge difference. I mean, even when I first started hunting, which it hasn't been all that long, but, you know, it's like I remember we at least had Ralph and Vicky were out there, you know, Candy Kiske, Tammy Gregory, Brenda Valentine. But other than that, there was, like, nobody I could come up with. So, I mean, it's been...
Yeah, look around now, there's...
A lots huge difference, which it's really, really neat to see. I mean, you know, you even look at, like, my mom. I mean, who would have ever thought my mom would have liked to hunt? Now she's like, we're going to go snow goose hunting. We actually almost canceled our snow goose hunt at the end of the month because we were going to be gone. And she's like, no, I want to go snow goose hunting. I'm like, all right. I mean, how do you say no
guess
to my mom?
Going.
I guess we're going snow goose hunting. So, yeah, and, I mean, she's totally into it and loves it and loves the lifestyle and loves, like, all of the stuff that it actually represents.
That is awesome. Do people, in your experience, like, do fans of your show, do you have a lot who start out not as hunters, and then because they're watching you, they take that plunge?
Gosh, I don't know if we have it necessarily.
Well, there's tons of them that not necessarily friends or people that we know, but, like at our booth, mm-hmm. Every day you have someone that comes by and say they shot their first deer, and a lot of them are, you know, me and my husband have been married for 21 years and never even thought of hunting. And then we started watching your show. We see you guys how much fun you're having. So I went out and went hunting this year and shot my first deer. You're high-fiving, and they're just so into it. And it's like, oh, it's so much fun. It's like, yeah, that's why we all hunt, because it's fun, you know. So just be able to spend time with your, you know, your husband, your wife, your kids, and things just to get involved. But we, every day at our booth, you'll hear that story.
But I think you definitely have, you know, we have our hardcore fans that, you know, have been hunting since they were little kids. And then, yeah, we definitely have a new fan base that have been introduced from maybe our show or some of the other shows that are out there.
But I think it's nice that, you know, because I didn't grow up hunting. I mean, I grew up in suburban Oklahoma City, a single mom, didn't have that exposure. But now, since we, you know, moved out to the country, and I'm getting more involved, but a lot of it's because my kids are getting involved. Because now my kids' friends, they've all hunted since they were kids. And so my 15-year-old was like, hey, we're going to go deer hunting this year, right, Dad? And I said, you've never expressed an interest. He was like, well, I'm telling you now, I'd like to go deer hunting. And I said, well, then, yeah, we're going to go. You know, let's go to the hunter ed course together. And you know, so I think you do find that exposure. But you also find, I think, an openness now. People aren't scared of the fact that they didn't grow up hunting.
Yeah, I think
you're right
on that.
It doesn't seem like as much of a closed society as perhaps it did 15, 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, I definitely think you're right on
Tiffany
that.
Tiffany didn't hunt when we met, you know. And I have five sisters, and they never hunted. It was like when I was a kid, it was something like me and my brother and my dad, my uncles and cousins and stuff went, but none of the girls did. And then now it's totally different. And, you know, like I said, Tiffany never hunted when we met, and probably for the first 2 years we dated, I worked at an archery shop all through college and high school, so she'd come up and say, hey, why don't you start shooting? So she shot a bow, like, for 2 years. We'd go to 3D shoots and everything, and then, like, 2 years into it, it's like, you want to try hunting? She said, I don't know if I can shoot something, but I guess I'll try. First day out, first night in the tree stand, deer came out, I'm shooting. There was no question about it, and she smoked it, went right in the alfalfa field and fell over, and she's been hooked ever since. But, so many of the women that go out now, it's the same thing, but it's like, well, why would we think it'd be any less fun for them than it is for us? It was just something that the men did, you know, 50 years ago, and the women didn't, and now it's totally changed. You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, we got that from, like I said, Ralph and Vicky and Jay and Tammy and all those, and I think a lot of younger people are now getting it from seeing Tiffany and Nicole Reeves and all the women on the shows. And, I mean, heck, you look at, there's as many shows out there almost now with women on them than there are with men. So that's what, you know, the young girls need to see. And we get that a lot from, you know, parents, like dads will come in and say, you know, thank you for your show because, you know, my daughter, you know, didn't think about hunting, but now she sees Tiffany, someone who still wears fingernail polish and jewelry, and still being a girl, that shows that, you know, you can go out and hunt and still be feminine, still be a girl, and not some tomboy, and still go out and hunt and have fun, and they're just loving it. So we get dads telling us that all the time.
I think it is a thing now.
It's more of a lifestyle.
Yeah. I was going to say it's not a fad.
Nope.
It is more of a lifestyle. It's you know, in look, we live in such an urbanized society now. We're always surrounded by concrete and steel. Just the fact that we can get outdoors and experience nature for, you know, a day, even if it's a morning, you know, but a day, a week. I think, you know, there's a part of us that wants to reconnect that way, even beyond the hunt aspect. But then when you bring in that empowering feeling of, you know, I did that. You can probably think back to that first deer that you took,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I can. I still get goosebumps. I mean, we have like a loop reel that's going in our booth. It's like 3 hours long now because it's, I mean, it's from hunts from 10 years ago. Yeah, we just keep adding on to it. And there's a few hunts on there that you literally watch. I mean, it doesn't matter who's in line. You stop. You're like, okay, we got to watch this shot or this hunt because it brings back such awesome memories. And, you know, you get goosebumps watching it because you're like, that was such an unbelievable day or unbelievable moment. And a lot of it, it's not about the actual, like, harvesting of an animal. Like I said, it's more, I think so much more of it is just, like you said, reconnecting with each other and your family and your friends and shutting off all of the electronics and just being out there and taking some pride in, you know, like here we talk a lot about, like, small food plots and how to do small food plots because, of course, we live in Iowa and everybody's like, wow, it's hard to do what you guys do. And it's like, yeah, but we didn't start out like that. We started out mowing a little clover field in with a little mower and a backpack sprayer, and you still can do that. And it's like watching, you know, the benefits of that and just taking pride in actually accomplishing something like that. So it's like it's so much more than just like actually hunting, you know.
Right.
Like you said, I think it's like a lifestyle. It's like a something to connect families and bring families back together and, you know, back to those basics of what we need in our world now.
Absolutely. I'm going to pick your brain about food plots, by the way.
I'm sure you're going to pick
questions.
My brain about food plots. Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, because, you know, it's okay to start small.
Absolutely.
But you should start.
That's how we all start. Yeah.
Right? But you have to start. You actually have to decide, okay, I'm going to act rather than think about what I would like to do. I'm just going to go ahead and start doing it.
Yep.
Well, amazingly enough, we had a guy in line today, and he's like, I can never shoot deer like you can. And it's like, well, why not? And he's like, well, I live in New York. And it's like, and he's like, well, I don't have any money. And I'm like, gas is cheap. But, like, we used to hunt public ground. It's like, it's a $100 tag. It's like, you just got to do it. You can't just sit and talk about it. It's like, that's no way to live life.
Yeah, and it was about my biggest deer that I had shot for years up until a couple of years ago. Was well before we had our show. It was on a 10-acre piece that was in the cities right in Minneapolis where we grew up. And they had 10 acres, and which was, you know, a pretty big piece back then, you know. I mean, because it was all housing development, basically. And they had a little four-wheeler track in the backyard on the back 5 acres of it. And then it was woods kind of behind it. And we just went and asked them if I can put clover seed down in the middle of this little track that they had for their four-wheelers. They said, sure, go ahead. You know, so we just went out there and hand-seeded clover and stuff
at you,
in there.
I'm sure, as you were doing that.
Yeah, and then I shot 177-inch 10-point, one of my biggest deer up until just a couple of years ago. I mean,
wow.
That was my biggest typical buck for a long time. I mean, well into doing our show and in Iowa and having all the stuff that we had. I mean, that was still one of my biggest deer and still like my second biggest typical to date, you know, on a 10-acre piece that I put, you know, just hand-seeded some clover in on the four-wheeler track. You know,
that's
the
awesome.
Kids used to drive in the backyard. So you don't need big pieces. You don't need, you know, I mean, of course, you just get lucky there. But that, let's face it, that's what hunting is. It's a lot of luck. But, you know, as long as you're just out having fun, like Tiffany said, it's not always about shooting something. It's just about getting out and spending time with your family and your friends. But, you know, it doesn't take a giant piece. My biggest, still like my second or third biggest deer is on 10 acres.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're running out of time. So I want to make sure that we get to the important stuff. When can people watch The Crush? Where can they watch The Crush?
That is so funny. We're on the Outdoor Channel. I was like, you had our website up. I'm not exactly sure what days we're on. Our big time is Sunday.
Most people know
that.
Sunday night
at 7:30.
7:30
Eastern time. But then they always change our other air times. But
yeah, we have like 3 and 4 air times. But our staple is always that Sunday night.
I should know this
with us
100%.
And I'm on there. But it's 7:30 Eastern time on Sunday nights is our main time.
All right, and we're right in the middle of new episodes right now.
Yeah,
Yes,
new ones. We do 20 episodes a year, so like 13 is normally what you do for third and fourth quarter, and then they usually rerun. But we do 20, so right now we're in the middle of the 7 new episodes as well. So, you know, they, and which are mostly like our you know, a lot of our bird hunting stuff, like duck hunting and goose hunting and
we just had,
like
I know
that,
we just so. Had a turkey show on because we had Cameron, our baby, out turkey hunting with us, and actually shot a turkey with my bow with him in the blind in Lee filming when he was like 8 weeks old. So
wow.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Got to start him early.
That's awesome.
You know?
And you said your son's name is Cameron?
Cameron.
Yeah.
Yep. He's my son's name.
Good choice.
All right. I said my son.
Exactly
our
you.
Son's name is Cameron. Yeah. You'll have to fight with Cameron Haynes over that one, you know. Actually, he legitimately texted me one day. He's like, on a serious note, did you name Cameron after me? I'm like, no. I'm like, but if you want to tell people that, go for
you're
it. Yeah, I was like, if you want to tell people that, go ahead.
Listen, I'm so glad you got a chance to come over and spend some time with us. Hope we can do this anytime you want. You've got an open microphone available. You guys are fantastic. We
us
love what
too.
You do.
It's like, heck, now we're just warming up here now. It's like, gosh,
I don't know. If we didn't have a seminar 5 minutes ago, it would have been.
Oh.
All right, well, listen, we'll let you run. Thank you again so much. It's
thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah,
anyway.
Anytime. We'd love to talk. So.
All right. Well, we'll have you back on very soon.
I hope so. Thank you
and come
so much.
Visit us in Farmville whenever you get a chance.
We're there.
All right. We'll see you soon. Lee and Tiffany from The Crush with Lee and Tiffany on Outdoor Channel. When we come back here, Ron Bellin from Reaper Outdoors, Jeff Axelson of Axelson Tactical will join us. Stick around. We've got more NRA News Cam and Company from the Great American Outdoor Show right after this.
I'm speaking with Jana Waller with Skullbound TV. Jana, welcome back to NRA News. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So I follow you on social media, and I always see, you know, you're out. Geez, you're everywhere. So I'm glad you had a chance to sit down and talk to us for a minute. But you use Nosler ammunition, and Nosler is our primary underwriting sponsor for NRA News Cam and Company. So I've been dying to get to sit down with you to talk a little bit about that. So tell us, how did you form this relationship with Nosler using their stuff?
Absolutely. Well, Jim Kinsey, my boyfriend and executive producer of Skullbound TV, he had a relationship with Nosler, a previous relationship. He introduced me. I'm from the Midwest, from Wisconsin.
I couldn't tell by the accent.
I know. You betcha. He introduced me to Nosler about 6 years ago, and that is literally the only ammunition I have used. And for all six seasons of Skullbound TV, we're filming right now for season six, and it's just so incredibly accurate and dependable. I did a really neat episode this year. You know, Nosler was founded on one of their moose hunts gone bad years ago, the ammunition, not on Nosler ammunition, but, you know, they founded the ammunition company because they needed something more reliable after this bad encounter with a moose hunt. And I ended up drawing an incredible moose tag, went into Alaska, do-it-yourself, rented the horses, packed in, ended up just being blessed with a 64-inch bull moose.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, those Nosler bullets did the trick.
And I'll tell you what, Janet, whether you're shooting, hunting like you do, shooting competitively, it, this is probably, if not outside the firearm, the most important thing to be a successful shooter.
It really is. I mean, a lot of things can go wrong, but it's so nice when you realize that, you know, especially like with a moose or an elk, they're such big animals. You need your ammunition to perform beautifully. And I got into long-range shooting about 3 years ago. I've trained with some of the best sniper champions, world champions. They all use Nosler as well. And it just when you can take out, you know, a lot of things can grow on you. And, of course, you need to plug in all your ballistics, and you've got wind and altitude and all these things. But when you have ammo that you can count on to perform the way it's supposed to, and, you know, when it says it's, you know, their ballistics are what they say it is, it's just a beautiful thing.
It takes out one of those nagging variables, whether the weather, the you know, that's so great. Speaking with Jana Waller with Skullbound TV about Nosler. So let's shift gear a little bit and talk a little bit about what's going on with Skullbound. How long have you been doing the show?
We are airing season five right now. It's amazing. Cool. I'm so blessed.
So going from when you started to now, did you ever think that this would be happening?
I really didn't. I did not. I didn't foresee the success that it would have, and we just feel so blessed that things have come together the way they have. Our hunts have gone well. I feel even more lucky to have the platform for my personal conservation causes, because conservation is a very passionate topic to me. We always include a conservation piece on every episode, but it's also given me the platform to start taking veterans out hunting. Right. And it's been seriously some of the most fulfilling moments of my life. I took another Army veteran double amputee out this year on his first elk hunt, and he got his bull on day two, and there were tears all around. And I have to say, when I told Nosler that I was taking another Army hero out, they built him the gun. They
wow.
gave him the ammo. You know, they have been such a tremendous supporter of Skullbound TV and our veterans. And it just is one more reason I'm so proud to be partnered with them.
And it's something I've been following, too. We've had you on before with Cam a number of times talking about that. I follow on social media. It's so great that you do that. And isn't it great to have it's a great agenda to have to begin with,
yeah.
if you ask me, but to have a vehicle like this, you know.
Yeah.
Some of us are very lucky and blessed that we get to do what we do.
Right.
And to me, you're doing such great work. So,
well, it's a way to say thank you. And, you know, here I am in a woman in the greatest country in the world. I'm able to pursue my dreams, and I'm able to, you know, have a house full of guns, if you will, because of these men and women. And it's just a way to give back to them. And it's a wonderful platform to have that we don't take lightly.
Jenna Waller, how can we get more information about you? Where do we got to go?
You can go to skullboundtv.com. Super simple. We also have a lot of information on the Sportsman's Channel website, but we're on Big Game Wednesday nights. I'm happy to be a part of this industry.
Jenna Waller, thank you so much for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to NRA News. Cam and company from the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. This is day three, but we've got a lot more coverage for you. In fact, all week long from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, we'll be bringing you coverage of the Great American Outdoor Show. It continues all week. It continues next weekend as well. As a matter of fact, there's a huge NRA country concert coming up on Saturday night. You've got Phil Robertson, who's going to be doing an event on Friday, I believe. There's all kinds of activities all throughout the week. You come by the NRA News set for the first time, and it only took us 12 years, almost 12 years. We have bumper stickers. Look at that, NRA News bumper stickers. So you can go and you can pick up your bumper sticker. The one thing that we don't have here is John Popp at the Great American Outdoor Show. And I think that John is probably watching right now, so we want to say hello to John. We miss you, and we hope that you're getting better. John had some health issues that kept him back home, but he'll be back before long, and we definitely miss our friend John up here. But we are having a fantastic time. Ron Bellin is going to be with us from Reaper Outdoors. Jeff Axelson of Axelson Tactical will be with us here in just a couple of minutes as well. I kind of figured this would happen at some point. As Lee and Tiffany said, this is a big show. There are a lot of halls, and it is possible to get lost in this big space and to all of a sudden look up and say, I have no idea where I am and where I'm supposed to go in relation to where I am right now. There are maps, just so you know, and you can eventually navigate and find your way wherever you need to be. But Ron Bell and Jeff Axelson will be coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Also, again, I want to let you know what we have coming up in hour two. Will Jimeno, Port Authority Police Department, retired officer, one of the officers who was trapped under the rubble of the World Trade Center, was actually here in Harrisburg for the Great American Outdoor Show. Will is a huge hunter and a big supporter of the Second Amendment, actually a listener to Cam and Company as well. I ran into Will over the weekend. We had a fantastic conversation. Chris Cox, NRA ILA Executive Director, sat down with us earlier today talking about why it is so important to get involved and to stay involved this election year. You know, I know tomorrow is the primary in New Hampshire, and then we'll have the caucuses in Nevada and then South Carolina, and then we've got the SEC primary. So we are in the thick of the political season, and it is not too early for you to think about, and not just think about, but to actually get involved, to take those steps, whether it's talking with your friends or family or finding out who your local election volunteer coordinator might be. Now is the time to get involved for election year 2016. Benny Spies, host of Gun It with Benny Spies on the Sportsman Channel, will join us as well in hour two. And in West Virginia right now, we are still paying attention to legislative news and other big Second Amendment stories from around the country. In West Virginia, it looks like the House of Delegates going to vote on permitless carry perhaps as early as today in West Virginia. Legislature last year, you know, passed a very similar measure. It was vetoed by Governor Earl Ray Tomblin, and it was vetoed after the session. So lawmakers did not have a chance. They had the votes, but they did not have a chance for a veto override. So the legislature is revisiting this issue again, and they are doing it, they're moving early in the session, so that if the governor decides to veto this bill again, that they've got the opportunity to override that veto before the session is over. But maybe the governor will have a change of heart. In the meantime, you know, if you're a West Virginia gun owner, make sure that your House member has heard from you on the permitless carry vote. We're also looking at a, can you believe it, another attack on the Second Amendment in Cook County, Illinois. One would think that they have done pretty much everything that they could do in Cook County to try to go after the rights of law-abiding gun owners and those who wish to exercise their right to keep and bear arms. But nope, they have found a new and inventive way to try to keep people away from their rights. They have proposed an ordinance there, an ordinance in Cook County, that would require everybody who is a gun owner carry liability insurance. The ordinance actually calls for, quote, the prohibitions on the sale of firearms to and the purchase of firearms by a person not covered by appropriate liability insurance. So unless somehow you bought firearm liability insurance, you couldn't be a legal gun owner in Cook County, Illinois, in Chicago. First of all, is it the legal gun owners in Chicago who are the real issue right now with crime in Chicago? I don't think so. I think it are, these, we're talking about folks who are prohibited by law from legally carrying a firearm, who are responsible for the violent crime that's being committed in the city of Chicago. They're not going to run out and buy liability insurance any more than they're going to acquire a firearms owner identification card, any more than they're going to apply for a concealed carry license. You know, the people who are responsible for the violence in Chicago don't care what the laws are. That's why they don't obey them. So another law, again, aimed at law-abiding gun owners, in a stated or supposed effort to try to reduce violent crime. Now, you tell me how well that's going to work. The Chicago Sun-Times says the intention of the ordinance sponsor is to have a major impact on gun violence. Again, how is that going to work exactly? The Sun-Times says it's an admirable thought. However, you must ask, how will this ordinance have any impact on gun-wielding criminals? The truth is, it won't. Oh, excuse me, I said this was the Sun-Times. This was actually a commissioner there in Cook County, Sean Morrison, writing a letter to the Chicago Sun-Times. Amazing. So at least there's one commissioner there in Cook County who recognizes this is another attempt to go after the wrong folks, the law-abiding gun owners, not the violent criminals there in Cook County in the city of Chicago. Now, listen, I am absolutely thrilled to have with us sitting down on set our friend Ron Bellin from Reaper Outdoors. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, my man. Yourself?
I am excellent. Jeff Axelson of Axelson Tactical. How
good
are
to
you?
See you again.
Good to see you. And I realize you fellas had to truck all the way across the show because you're there in the Shooting Sports Hall. We are in another show, another hall entirely. I almost said another show entirely. Feels like it's another show because this place is so big. But we appreciate you making the long journey to our set. How's the show going for you so far?
Show's going great. We're meeting a lot of people, getting our products out there and our foundations. And, you know, the big thing is I didn't realize how big this show was. This is our first year ever coming here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we were fortunate enough to get a booth and go out there and be across from Daniel Defense. So it's a good location.
You got a great location. I was there yesterday. I apologize. I tried to stick around. I came back. But, you know, you say you're talking to a lot of people. You are talking to a lot of people. You were a busy guy.
Absolutely. We got a big following in Pennsylvania, you know, especially since we're from PA originally.
Right.
You know, that's where I'm from. Grew up here, ran these mountains all my life, and I always call this home.
That is awesome. So it must feel really good to be here at this show and to have that sort of hometown flavor and feel.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, a lot of Steeler fans here. So that helps. On top of that, we have, you know, people with the same mindset. That is always good, especially a lot of these gun shows and, you know, especially the outdoor show like this. These are the Americans that are out there in the rural America, even in the cities that come in. They like to hunt, fish, camp, hike, do all that stuff. Pro-Second Amendment is, you know, that's the big talk nowadays. It's always in our minds. And Pennsylvania has the largest amount of hunters at any time out in the woods at one time. So you know, here we are. This is the, in my opinion, and I'm tainted because I'm from here. This is central right here. This is central for Second Amendment. Bam, let's get out there.
Right. I mean, opening day of deer season in Pennsylvania, that's like a state holiday.
It is.
An unofficial state holiday. You got kids.
Oh, it's official.
Is it official?
It's official because you don't go to school.
Right.
And so instead of not going to school, the school's actually shut down for 2 days of deer season because you're going to miss so many children anyway. So
that's awesome.
They do. They shut it down. We never had to go to school. I love deer season.
Favorite time of year. And, Jeff, I mean, again, this is your first year here at the Great American Outdoor Show. You just came from SHOT as well. It's obviously, it's, you know, it's a different type of show. This is not an industry show. It's not a trade show. This is open to consumers. But you have an opportunity now to introduce your rifle to, almost around 200,000 folks over the next 9 days. What are your impressions so far?
These are the shows that that I love to come to more than any of the industry SHOT Show stuff, because it's just, you get to just meet the people, and this is why we love traveling around like we do and doing what we do, is getting just to have those, meet new people and have those, you know, new relationships and have new friendships and get to kind of show our wares and tell them what we're doing and spread the word. So,
and from the consumer side, it's cool because this is an opportunity to chat and talk with you. Right? I mean, you know, you can talk with the head of Axelson Tactical. You can talk with the head of Reaper Outdoors. And you know, you've got you probably can't spend like 90 minutes talking to you, but you can have an actual conversation. You can ping pong questions back and forth and find out more about this rifle in a situation where you really can't. It's not like you're online, you know, chatting to customer support or anything like that. You're actually talking face to face with the folks who make these products.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a lot of people come up, you know, obviously with the TV show, a great fan base. We have friends from around the area that come down, relatives that come down and visit us here at the booth. But, you know, a lot is the fan base, you know, the people that follow us on, whether it's the TV show or follow the story, Lone Survivor, and know the story about Jeff's brother, Matt Axelson, and they come in. I mean, I'll sign an autograph. Next thing you know, they'll go by me. They're going right to Jeff. I want to meet Jeff Axelson, you know. I mean, he's a hero, you know, and so it's a great feeling to know that the people know this story, they know what we're about, they know what we're doing together. And, yeah, just meeting and talking, hearing people's stories, what they like to see, what they like to, you know, hearing their hunting stories and their political views. I mean, we're hearing so much about what's going on now with you know, our government and what's going on with the politicians and, you know, especially with the Second Amendment and all this stuff. So that's what brings all these people together. And they want to know our opinions as much as we want to know theirs. We want to know what people are thinking out there.
It's good to know that you're getting those questions about politics. It sounds like people are engaged. They are aware this is an election year. And as frustrated as they might be with what's going on in D.C., it sounds like they're not giving up. They're still motivated. They're ready to get out and vote.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the big key. And I tell everybody that'll listen, you know, I say, listen, the majority needs to speak up. It's time for the majority to get out there and vote. I don't want to hear a complaint from somebody who doesn't vote because you didn't vote. Sometimes we get in that mix. When I say majority, don't take that wrong. It's not a black and white issue. It's not a racist issue or anything like that. It is the majority of those who think about the basic fundamentals of what brought America together. Mm-hmm. And the Second Amendment, and that's what the NRA is for. That's why I'm a life member. That's why Jeff is. That's why we support what you guys do each and every day. You know, we're good stewards of the weapons. We're safe and we're responsible weapons owners, you know, and we promote that. But the problem is, in this country right now, the majority of us don't speak up. We don't say it, and we don't go out there. And we're not out there raiding, you know, drug stores and liquor stores and getting the press. And that's the thing. And people turn you off when you're talking about this because they think you're just going overboard. And it's not true. This is our basic, you know, fundamentals of America. And it's gun ownership, protection, protecting home and country. You know, and that's what it's all based around.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, look, I think it's so important, and I'm really glad you guys talked about the fact that you're NRA members and life members, and you support the organization as well as the Second Amendment, because, you know, look, I see the mainstream media articles. There was one today at Salon about the SHOT Show. It was written from a guy who clearly hates firearms. And it was ridiculous. It was absurd. But you hear voices like yours, Ron, and Jeff. I mean, again, you guys have not just great stories to tell, but you have, you know, look, you fought for our freedoms. You have sacrificed for our freedoms, including the freedom of the guy who hates guns, to say, I hate guns, and I'm not going to own one.
Yeah.
But you've also fought for my right to keep and bear arms.
That's right.
And so when you can raise your voice and you can tell your stories, you're right. We live in a day and age, I think, when people are intent on shutting up those that they don't want to hear speak. They're either afraid of what they're going to say or they disagree with what they're going to say, so their goal is to try to shut them up. But when we use our voice and we raise our voices, one, when we have each other's back, we don't have to be afraid of the speech police coming after us. We don't have to be afraid of somebody coming after Axelson Tactical and I'm going to shut you down because I don't like what you're saying and what you're doing, because you know that you're going to have a lot of people who are going to take your side and stand with you. So I think you're absolutely right about that. All right, listen, we've only got like a minute left here, unfortunately. So Jeff, I've got to ask you, Axelson Tactical, if you had to make that elevator pitch to a prospective gun owner in 30 seconds, what would it be?
We've come together with our family of brands we're all working together, from Reaper Outdoors and putting together, working with Ron and putting together the best weapons we can, with the best testing we can, with the best parts we can, and using that, the group of people that we have in the family of brands and the family of our crew to really just bring out the best product we can to the marketplace. So
well,
with the spirit behind it and the legacy behind it to try to carry on the story and promote, you know, the things we believe in.
That is awesome. Jeff, listen, I'm so glad we could have a chance to talk. And Ron, thank you so much. I'm going to come back over to the booth at some point. I'll wait tomorrow morning. I'll go over bright and early so that I can wait my turn to talk. But I want to chat more with you guys. Thank you so much for what you do, and you guys are welcome back anytime. But you know
thank
that
you
by now,
us.
Right?
Really
absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Axelson, our friend Ron Bellin. When we come back, Will Jimeno, Port Authority Police Department, retired World Trade Center survivor. Stick around. More NRA News Cam and Company on the way.
Speaking with Kevin Neuendorf with USA Shooting. Kevin, welcome back to NRA News. How are you, my friend?
Oh, it's great to be here. I'm doing wonderful. It's an Olympic year, so a lot of excitement building.
Man, there's a lot of excitement. So a lot of things to talk about. We want to talk about Rio, of course. We're going to get to that. But first, you have a new campaign that you guys just launched. Tell me about it.
Well, it's the Shooting is My Olympic Sport campaign. So one of the things that we're trying to do is rally a community around the aspect of Olympic shooting. So not many people know that, you know, there's 15 Olympic disciplines, shooting events. And so what we're trying to do is gather everybody around this vast community that we have and really get them to rally around our Olympic shooting sports. So, you know, not many people may follow the Olympics. They may know of gymnastics or track and field,
right, yeah.
But we're going to bring them to shooting. You know, we can all rally around that. So that's kind of what we're doing this year.
Awesome.
Going to have a lot of fun around it. So we developed this nice new logo. And just trying to bring everybody together around our cause.
I love it. So tell us about Rio. How's it looking?
Hey, we're looking good. We've got several world champions. Of course, we've got the return of, you know, Kim Rohde, a five-time Olympic medalist.
Great Kim Rohde. What a great ambassador for the shooting sport she is.
Yeah, she's
an ambassadress. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever the right word. She's awesome.
Yeah, whatever she is, she does it really well, so including shooting. So, you know, so she's got to make her spot still. That's how competitive our events are. Oftentimes, the hardest thing to do in the United States is make our own team.
Right. It's qualify, right?
Qualify.
Yeah.
Because there's that much depth. You know, Kim competes in skeet shooting. Well, we have a world champion in Morgan Kraft who's already earned her spot to Rio. So she beat out Kim.
Uh-oh, here we go.
So there's two spots, and Kim's in the lead right now, and we'll find out in May if she makes the team, but she's looking pretty good now.
I'll tell you what, Kevin, backstep a little bit with me here, talking about Rio then. What are, because, you know, this is where sometimes it gets confusing even for me, what are the current the shooting events that are going to be in the Olympics?
Yeah, if you think it's confusing for you, what do you think I am? So I'm trying to explain it all. We got 15 Olympic events. We got five events in pistol, five events in shotgun, and five events in rifle.
So how does the U.S. Olympic Committee determine that, or how's it? Because didn't one of the events that Kim was in a few years ago got
changed or worked in? I know they've changed the sports a lot.
Yeah, so the International Olympic Committee really kind of sets the table in terms of what Olympic events in, and they're always looking at refactoring in a whole bunch of different things, whether it be gender equity or how well they play off on television or whatever it is. So they're always adding and subtracting events. So it's determined by the International Olympic Committee, and then they work with the International Federation for Shooting.
So now listen to that, folks. 15 shooting events in the Olympics. So shooting is not only my Olympic sport, but the Olympic sport. It's a big part of the Olympics. So it's important we all get to know about it.
Yeah, there's a couple facts there that are important. USA Shooting has won 107 Olympic medals all time. We've been in every Olympics since 1896.
Wow.
A lot of people wouldn't understand the success that we've had, but we're fourth most among all medals. So if you think of the big events, track and field, swimming, gymnastics, the things that we traditionally dominate in, we're fourth best among all sports in winning medals.
Awesome.
So we've got a great history of success.
We're there to take that ride with you guys here at NRA News. We love the stuff we do with you. Before we run out of time, Kevin, how can people get more information about USA Shooting, about this new campaign?
We got to go to the website, usashooting.org. You can also find us on social media at USA Shooting. Let's rally around this idea of shooting is my Olympic sport.
Welcome back. Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our on-location sponsor, AdCor Defense. And we are coming to you from the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Yes, there is an actual aquarium. Actually, there are more than one aquarium here at the Great American Outdoor Show. That's in the fishing hall. Those of you who are tuning in online can see this. Those of you listening on SiriusXM Patriot or maybe on the podcast or iHeartRadio, let me just describe what folks are seeing here. There is a huge portable aquarium full of fish. There's also a trout fishing pond that kids can cast in. There's the three-gun experience. There's a family fun zone. This is a very family-friendly show, by the way. I want to let you know that. You've got wide aisles, lots of strollers. People are, you know, taking their time. They're looking. So just make sure you walk slow, but it's absolutely fantastic. As a matter of fact, we are right next to the Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program booth, and they've been giving out, I don't know how many hundreds. They might even be into the thousands by now. Of a little stuffed Eddie Eagles and Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program materials. It's been great to watch families walk up and get the items there and learn about the Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program, which had a big revamp, you know, not too long ago. So the what I learned: stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult. That's all been replaced. It's stop, don't touch, run away, tell a grown up. You've got a brand new DVD. You've got the Eddie Eagle Wing Team, and it's just a fantastic program. So, again, so much to see and do here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the Great American Outdoor Show. I hope that you'll be able to join us at some point during the week. Now, coming up on the program this hour, Chris Cox, NRA ILA's executive director, going to join us. Benny Spies, the host of Gunna with Benny Spies on Sportsman Channel, is going to join us. And as I said, over the weekend, I had the opportunity, it was a real honor, to meet Will Jimeno. Retired Port Authority police officer, World Trade Center survivor, and a guy who is an advocate, not only for our Second Amendment, but for all of our rights and for this great country of ours. So I want you to take a look at the conversation and a listen at the conversation that we had with Will Jimeno. Well, we are here at the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and joining us on set, I am just absolutely thrilled to have with us Will Jimeno, New York Port Authority police officer, World Trade Center survivor. Will, it is such a pleasure and an honor to spend some time with you today.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. It really is.
Oh, I got to tell you, I mean, yesterday you walked up to the set and you told me that you actually listened to the program.
Yes.
You presented this patch to me, and I was stunned that you listened. So thank you for listening to the program.
No, I want to thank you because, you know, the things I believe in, you speak about. And it's things that need to be spoken about, you know, and the media doesn't. And you do. You bring those common sense, logical points across to many of us, and I appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much. Now, I want to talk about what you're doing here at the Great American Outdoor Show. The hat on your head here, Northwoods Bear Products.
Yes.
And you're at the booth with them today, right?
Yes. I was very fortunate to harvest a large black bear in New Jersey, an urban black bear. There's a story coming out about it in Bear Hunting Magazine because it was a problem bear. And it goes back to basically everything that we believe in, hunting, you know, owning guns and hunting actually in this case helped the community. So it's a great story that's coming out on there. And so Northwoods Bear Products asked me to come and be a representative here to speak to people on their product, which I use, and it worked really well. Sitting here with them and then got to meet you, so it's a pretty cool deal.
That's awesome. So how did you get into hunting? I mean, did you grow up hunting?
No, I grew up in Hackensack, New Jersey, a Spanish kid. Came here from Colombia when I was two. My parents so were looking for the American dream. I went into the military, into the Navy. When I got out, I met my beautiful wife, to-be, Allison. Took her pistol shooting once, and she impressed me with the gun. And then she said, you want to try something cool? And I said, yeah. And she said, let's try bow hunting. And I bow hunt. And she put a bow in my hand, and I've never looked back. I think she regrets it today, but it's part of my life, the outdoors, the shooting sports, the hunting. And she's the one that actually got me into the outdoors, and I appreciate it. I love her for it.
That is awesome. I love that story because a lot of times we hear the other side of it. We hear, you know, women say that, oh, yeah, I wasn't really a hunter, but my husband got me into it, or he told me, you know, go out there. So I love that twist. I love the fact that we are now living in a day and age where officially now we have women who are getting their husbands and their husbands-to-be involved in hunting. That's awesome.
It's awesome. And, you know, now we have, you know, Iwasaki, Lukowski. It's good to see a lot of women out there and spreading our sport, which is important. We need to the next generation. We need not only young men, we need young women, and we need them younger today so we can expand on our freedoms here that we have.
Are you concerned that we are losing our freedoms? I mean, you know, we're going to be approaching the approaching the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Mm-hmm. How are we doing in terms of remaining a free country and confronting our enemies?
Well, you know, I'm always an optimist. You see the film World Trade Center that tells the tale of what happened to our team and America that day, I still have a lot of optimism. But we're under attack. We're under attack from the Obama administration. We're under attack from liberals who basically have an agenda that really is not what America's built on. And, you know, because of people like you, because of the NRA, because of many Americans in my community alone, people are putting in for gun permits every day. People use me as a reference. I believe that it's a hard fight, but I still believe in America. But it's a scary thing. I got to tell you, when I'm watching the news and all they want to do is continue to restrict access to weapons for the good people, it makes no sense. I mean, the criminals just get away with everything. They set everything up for the criminals. And that's just the fact. And I tell people that live in a bubble, you need to really look at the situations. It's not your regular, God-honest, fearing American who's doing these bad acts. You know, when you have these mass shootings, these are ill people. These are people that are getting their guns illegally, you know. And we can't punish the good for the bad. You know, I hear Obama coming out on different issues and talking, well, we don't want to label all Muslims bad. Well, why do you label gun owners all bad? I mean, that's just common sense. What's good for one should be good for all. And we're Americans, you know. Like I said, I tell everybody, that American flag is not made out of cloth. It's made out of the blood of patriots. All those men and women who have died, given their lives, we can have the right to the Constitution. It's like spitting on their grave, and we can't do that. We have to just be logical people and say, look, we got bad guys. Like they say in Chicago, if they really enforce the laws, you would lock up guys that are carrying guns and let them sit in jail for a long time. That would deter them. They're going to say next time, hey, I just got 7-8 years for carrying a gun. Maybe I'm not going to do that again. It's just common sense.
Heck, I mean, just take a look at New Jersey. You know, my wife lived in Camden for almost a decade. Back in the 1990s when it was the murder capital of the United States. And, you know, the gun laws were really tough even back then. You know, you had to get your pistol purchase permit and you had to get your firearms ID card and all of the hoops and hurdles that you had to jump through as a legal gun owner that the violent criminals paid absolutely no attention to, right? And so the people who were prevented from exercising the right to keep and bear arms were those who couldn't afford the government fees,
exactly.
Those who, you know, couldn't take time off of work to make multiple trips down to the sheriff's department, all of these burdens and barriers that were put in between them and their rights, and it didn't make anybody any safer, because again, Camden was the murder capital of the world. It's still one of the most violent cities in New Jersey right now.
Since the beginning of this year, I think it was only 2 hours into the new year in Newark, New Jersey, as most people know, Newark, great city, but it has its issues. And, you know, here we have. We have shootings 2 hours into it. And, again, it's not your legal gun owner, you know. And it's very frustrating, very frustrating, you know. Here is Chicago, Obama's place. Already, I believe, in January, over 50 homicides. Nobody talks about it. It's only when you get a crazy that does that. And then who do they come after? They come after the legal gun owners, the people that are following the rules. New Jersey, Governor Corzine, he did nothing for us with the only one handgun a month every 30 days. So for the sportsman who wants to buy, shoots 22s and needs to have several 22s for a competition, that person has to wait 30 days to buy one. It did nothing for us. All it does is bear down us, the legal gun owners, and it's frustrating.
You say you're seeing, even in New Jersey right now, with the attempts, I mean, decades-long attempts to obliterate that lawful gun culture, you actually have friends, relatives who are saying, yeah, you know what, actually, I want to exercise my right. I want to go ahead and become a gun owner.
And a lot of women, believe it or not, in the past month, I've had about 7 different women in my town where I live asking me about what firearm should I own. I want to purchase a firearm. And I tell everybody, too, you know, especially us young guys that are macho, you know, everybody sees the TV and they just go out and buy guns. Guns are tools. They're just like, hey, if I need a hammer, I need a drill. You got to buy the right weapon for the right job. So I try to explain to them, you need to get trained. You need to know how to use the weapon, no different than using a saw, because it's common safety stuff. And then I explain to them what works for what. What do you want it for? Home defense? You want it for carrying purpose? In New Jersey, I mean, you'd have to be God to carry. But it's encouraging to see people exercising their rights. And that's what I'm proud of. You know, people keep attacking the Second Amendment. But you don't want the First Amendment attacked. You don't want your Fourth Amendment attacked. Why attack the Second? Because when the Second crumbles, the whole Constitution will crumble. But I'm always an optimist, and seeing so many people in New Jersey right now, and they know me because of my background. You know, I do a lot with the outdoor. I do a lot with Mossy Oak, the company. So they see me doing some hunting shows and talking about firearms and things like that. So as an American, I'm very proud that I have people willing to come to me in confidence, say, what weapon should I get? And saying, hey, I'm putting in for a gun permit. Can we put you down as a reference? It's really cool. I just had one of our local neighbors nearby me. His wife put in for a handgun permit, and she said, you know, I see where this is going. I want to make sure that I have the opportunity to exercise my right. I tell her we're not going to lose that right, because I think it'd be a cold day in hell before we as Americans gave up our Second Amendment. I know I would. You know, I would not allow anyone to take my right away. I fought for this country. I suffered through 9/11. Those rights there, they're paid for in blood. And I think that people have to understand that. You might not be a gun owner, but you better support that Second Amendment person who believes in that, because that's the person when things go bad. We saw it during the floods in Katrina, Sandy. When things go bad, people need to protect their families. People turn on each other. It's a sad fact. And you have to have that right, your God-given right, to protect your family. What better way to do it with the Second Amendment?
We're talking with Will Ameno. And Will, I want to ask you, you know, folks who have seen the movie World Trade Center, they know your story. You know, in many ways, I think you are defined publicly for what happened on 9/11, but you were already a man when 9/11 occurred. How did you get to the point where you were a Port Authority officer, where you were on duty there on 9/11? What I mean, you talked about you were born in Columbia, you moved to Hackensack when you were 2. What made you the man who you are?
Well, I go back to my mom and dad. They are hardworking people, came from a different country, wanted the American dream. My mom instilled in me that be proud of your heritage, because the United States is a melting pot, and we can offer something, but we're Americans. We fly the American flag. My mom says, you learn English. Like I was mentioning to you yesterday, my mom has a tough Spanish what's the word I'm looking for?
Accent?
Accent, yeah. But she loves America, and she instilled in me, be proud of heritage, but we're always American. And my dream was to help people. That was the thing. And for me, it was law enforcement. So I went into the Navy, served on USS Tripoli, just got off that ship before she got hit by the mine in the first Gulf War. Came home, went to school. Took me 6 long years to become a police officer in New Jersey. It's a very sought-after position. And I was lucky enough to get on the Port Authority Police of New York and New Jersey. And it was a dream. We were 100th class, graduated on January 19th at the World Trade Center. And then 9 months later, I find myself in the worst attack in U.S. history, you know. And one of the things growing up for me was I would always watch the military movies. I was so just taken back on how brave Americans were, how they would fight for not only us but other nations. And I wanted to serve. So I served there. I was lucky enough to get on a police department that serves 2 states, New York and New Jersey. And on 9/11, you know, when I got there, I had a great sergeant that wanted to go in and rescue people. had a great team of guys. You know, I cannot go with this conversation without saying that, you know, we lost 37, the most in law enforcement history, followed by our brothers at the NYPD with 23, and, of course, the 343 firefighters and countless civilians who were just doing what we all do, practicing our liberties every day. And I was fortunate enough to survive this attack after 13 hours. But that goes back to what we believe in, not only the Second Amendment. On 9/11, evil came to our doorstep, and evil thought we were going to falter. And yet we, in the face of evil, showed them, no, people came in to save us. We were in between both towers. We were in the epicenter of it. And yet people, other Americans, put their lives on the line to get me out. And that's why, for me, as a survivor, not only is it my duty to tell about the bravery of my fellow officers and everyone that day, but about America and how we will not allow evil to triumph. And that starts with us at home protecting our own rights. We have enough outside influences in the world today, ISIS, you know, the Taliban, common criminals in the United States that want to take our freedom somehow, some way. And we're too busy trying to take our own freedoms away, which just is mind-boggling. So I tell people, when you suffer and you give blood, you get a different perspective on why it's important that we protect the whole Constitution, especially the Second Amendment.
Listen, Will, it is, again, a pleasure and an honor spending some time with you. You got a microphone anytime you want. I would love to have you back on the program.
Well, I appreciate it. And I just, again, thank you and the NRA for everything you guys do, because we need to fight, and we can never give that up. Because, again, when we give that up, not only are we failing us, we're failing all those that have died to make sure that we have these freedoms.
Will Ameno, thank you, sir.
Thanks, man.
We'll talk to you again
soon. God bless.
Will Ameno joining us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. And when we come back from the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex, NRA ILA's Executive Director Chris Cox. Later in the hour, our friend Benny Spies, the host of Gunning with Benny Spies on Sportsman Channel. Got a lot more coverage for you as well. So stick around. We'll be right back here at the Great American Outdoor Show on NRA News, Cam and Company.
Speaking with Juliana Crowder with A Girl and a Gun. Juliana, welcome back to NRA News. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous.
Tell folks, what is A Girl and a Gun?
A Girl and a Gun is an organization for women, and we get them out to the shooting range. We have activities for ladies who are brand new all the way through experienced shooters. So we offer kind of like a social club. But we also are being very serious about safety and training, and then also helping women reach certain goals with firearms that they might have.
Why did you start this?
It was really important for me to see more women out in the competitive shooting sports and also taking more responsibility for their personal safety. So I wanted to have kind of like a happy hour or a non-confrontational experience at the range.
Right.
So we just started hosting Girls Night Out and making it a social experience and then slowly introducing the more serious training aspect.
Well, whether it's shooting sports or hunting or anything, there's much more than just the aspect of picking up the gun. You're right. It's a social thing that involves friends, family, mentoring, whatever it involves, it's
right.
So important to make that work. Good. So just give us a flavor of some of the stuff you like to do.
So we like to go shoot IDPA and three gun. We have ladies going on hunts for the first time.
Cool.
We have ladies learning about archery.
All right, good.
We share experience about holsters, guns, different gear and equipment that might work better for certain body types.
A lot different for men and women.
And we're also sharing the emotional experience of being a firearms owner, because for some, it could be a traumatic transition from something that's happened in their life, and for others, it's a very joyful experience of liberation and empowerment. So we really are offering something for everyone.
Awesome. How can people get more information about A Girl and a Gun?
They can find us at agirlandagun.org, and we're also on Facebook.
Juliana Crowder, A Girl and a Gun, thank you so much for being on NRA News. You're always there for us, but thank you for what you do. Thank you for your passion. You keep it up, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Speaking with Greg Foster with Manta. Greg, welcome back to NRA News. What's new with Manta?
Well, Manta just continues to move forward in the heat mitigating material arena. We've got so much popularity around Class 3 firearms, the suppressor usage that's going nationwide, rail covers that go on the guns because they get hot. And that's where we stand out, because the product is all a silicone polymer composite, all a proprietary mix, and yet it keeps the hand cool, keeps, if you're using a suppressor and they get pretty hot pretty fast, keeps you from burning yourself, somebody, something, just because of that property, that heat mitigation.
So this is an interesting display. You've got a lot of products on there. Give us a quick idea what they are.
Well, the key features are rail covers and the suppressor cover. That's basically the line. One of the key things that we do differently from anybody else is we actually have a wire management system built into the rail covers. So that if you're using accessories that have wires, it allows you to run your wires in and out of the ports, down the canals, and then dump your micro pouch off into a specific switch area so that it locks it in place. Yet, if you want to take that off and move it someplace else, you're not taking off electric tape or zip ties or anything like that. You're just moving it.
So it gives you a really neat, functional sort of, not only an appearance, but just functionality to the farm.
That's right. It dresses it up, keeps those wires out of the way, and yet still gives you all the properties of the heat mitigation so that as that rail gets hot, you don't even have to wear gloves. You still got a good tactile rubber feel that really works great.
That's great. Greg Foster with Manta. How to get more information about the Manta products?
Just go to manta.us and go online, and we'll be happy to send catalogs. There's all kinds of YouTube videos on the product to see.
Greg, thank you so much for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our on-location sponsor, AdCor Defense. Yes, this is a dog-friendly show as well, the Great American Outdoor Show at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. All kinds of animals alive and stuffed here at the Great American Outdoor Show. And still to come on the program this afternoon, Benny Spies, he's an animal as well. Hi, Benny. How are you, buddy? Also, Katie Moyer, political writer, talking about campus carry. Chris Brackett of Arrow Affliction. Matt Moret from Zinc Calls and talking turkey with Matt Moret. Plus, right now, want to get to our conversation with NRA ILA Executive Director Chris Cox, who stopped by our set earlier today. Take a look and a listen. We are here with NRA ILA Executive Director Chris Cox. Chris, are you enjoying the Great American Outdoor Show?
Cam, I just got here, but I'm having a great time.
This is amazing. I mean, this is my third year. I've been lucky enough to go each and every year. Every year it seems to get bigger and better, and there are so many exhibitors and guides and outfitters. You know, I want people to come here and explore the show, but I want people to take time and actually talk to the people at these booths, because every one of these folks has a great story to tell.
They really do, and what I enjoy about this show is you can see the anglers talking to the bow hunters, talking to the right to carry permit holders, talking to the rifle hunters and the pistol shooters, all with that common thread, that common theme of this is important, this is our culture, this is who we are, and this is what they hate. And if that's the takeaway this week, I hope that's what people will leave, is that no matter what you believe in, or what you participate in as an angler or as a bow hunter or as a traditional rifle hunter, they're after all of what we believe in. This is a culture war. What we're engaged in between now and November is critically important. So I'm excited to feel the energy that's here, and I hope we have this kind of energy on Election Day.
You know, I hope we do, too. And living in Virginia, we've seen that gun owners and voters can turn out. We had a off-year election last year. Bloomberg spent several million dollars trying to flip our state Senate in Virginia, and thanks to gun owners in Virginia, that didn't happen. So I know that we can fight back, even if, you know, the billionaires have deeper pockets.
Right.
We've got that grassroots army.
And our job individually, your job, obviously my job, part of what we all need to do is make sure that our fellow, whether they're gun owners or not, people who think like us, people who appreciate freedom in this country, First Amendment, Second Amendment, it doesn't matter, that they get engaged. Because what can happen, we've seen it in the past, is people get frustrated, people get angry, sometimes people get scared, and they just throw their hands up and say, the hell with it, I'm not going to participate. This is a year where we cannot have anyone sit on the sidelines. This is a year that's really about our survival. What we do between now and November will determine the type of country we live in and our kids and grandkids. And so we have not just a huge opportunity, a huge responsibility, and that's how we need to all view it. Make sure nobody sits on the sidelines this year. This year we're all in this together.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you look at what happened in 2008 with the election of Barack Obama, and elections have consequences.
That's right.
We saw two Supreme Court justices who likely would not have been nominated had a pro-gun conservative been in the White House. And you look, you know, what could happen over the next 4 years or over the next 8 years, the number of appointments to the Supreme Court that might be open. And you look at the 5-4 decision, McDonald and Heller. You look at the Fourth Circuit case that just came out of Maryland saying that, semi-autos, these are guns that are protected by the Second Amendment. All that's at risk.
This election literally will have implications for not just the next 4 or 8 years of one or two terms of the next president, but for the next 40 or 50 years. Because what we've seen with Barack Obama, he's not putting on old moderates onto the Supreme Court. He's putting on young radicals, and that will continue if it's Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. So we really, that in and of itself is a reason for every gun owner, every person who cares about freedom in this country to get engaged right now. Regardless of whether or not you like some of the candidates more or less, look, this is about the future of our freedom. The Supreme Court, the Second Amendment, it is all on the ballot this November. And it's a great point, because if we don't educate our fellow gun owners into knowing exactly what you just said, we're in for a rough ride.
So what's the best way for somebody to get involved? I mean, if they have never really been politically, they go and they vote. But they want to do more. What do they do?
Well, first of all, they can tune into your show, go to nranews.com, go to nra.org, nraila.org. There's a great wealth of information. Regardless of what your interests are, you can find it on the NRA's website. Go to nra.org, and you can navigate it from there. You can call us. You can get engaged. But right now, it really is an education and activation. We need to make sure that people who they know things aren't right in this country, they can feel it. You see cops being assassinated. You see the president standing against common sense, standing against what makes sense to all of us, fighting against this culture. And it's making sure there is something you can do. And your vote does matter, and your activity and your opportunities to get engaged do matter. Joining the National Rifle Association matters. Getting your friends to join. Talking about it. Sharing a conversation. This is what we learned in 6th or 7th grade civics class. When you want to get together and speak with a louder voice, you get together and speak with a louder voice and have a bigger impact. There are more of us than there are of them, but we have to make sure we're doing everything we can, and that's what we're going to be focused on at the NRA. And anyone who wants to join, anyone who wants to participate, please call us, email us, show up to a friend's dinner, show up to a grassroots seminar, show up to a gun show, find the NRA recruiter, find the membership folks, tune in to Cam's show, and we'll win this thing. We can save this country and save this freedom, but it's going to take every one of us working hard to do it.
Talking with Chris Cox, NRA ILA Executive Director. You know, there has been a huge push to make this year the year that politicians feel safe to go after gun control. And we've seen that not just from Bloomberg, but from a lot of the media. And over the weekend, I saw this story, gun control not resonating as an issue in New Hampshire. It seems the more the elites want to push this idea of restricting our right to keep and bear arms on us, we are seeing more and more Americans wake up and say, whoa, time out. I'm not the problem here. And in fact, they're actually deciding to exercise their rights in ways that they hadn't before. They're becoming gun owners. They're becoming concealed carry holders.
Well, what you've seen Hillary Clinton and the rest of them do is say that, well, now that we have Michael Bloomberg and his billions of dollars behind us, let's go right for the Second Amendment. Let's put a stake through the NRA's heart. Let's destroy the organization. Let's shut down their membership so we can then implement not only our Second Amendment strategy, but the rest of their strategy, because they know that we stand in the way of their redefinition of this country and redefinition of what freedom means in this country. What Michael Bloomberg hasn't figured out yet is that average people don't trust him, and they have a reason not to trust him, because he's a hypocrite. And when you go around and tell people that you're stupid to own a firearm, but you're surrounded 24/7 with armed security, that really doesn't resonate well with average people across this country. And Hillary Clinton has overplayed her hand, and we're going to make sure that the American people know, if she wants to have that debate that you don't have the right to keep a gun in your home to defend yourself and your family, let's have that debate in Ohio. Let's have it in Virginia. Let's have it in Wisconsin. Let's have it in Colorado. Let's go to Nevada. Let's go to Florida. We will go anywhere and everywhere and have this intellectually honest debate of ideas. They don't want to have that debate, obviously. And you'll hear, Barack Obama sounded like Charlton Heston's illegitimate child during the campaign, like he was some sort of champion of the Second Amendment. But what he's proven over and over again was that the NRA was right. The national news media said, nobody's trying to take your firearms away. Nobody. This is NRA trying to scare people. Well, Barack Obama scared people. We didn't have to. He scared people by coming after our firearms, coming after our freedom. Hillary Clinton's not running for a third term. She thinks he didn't go far enough. She's going to go much further, which is why we have to do everything we can to fight every step of the way. And we will do it, as you know, without apology and without hesitation when they try to come between us and our freedom.
All right, last question for you. Way back during the first Republican debate, the NRA ran a commercial, Meet Bloomberg, right? And I saw the stories, oh, this is crazy. Why is the NRA going after Bloomberg saying he might get into the presidential race? Well, now, Chris, we're seeing a lot of people say Bloomberg needs to get in. Bloomberg's conducted his polling. He says he'll make a decision by March. You guys were on to something a few months ago.
This is an individual who literally wants to purchase with his billions American freedom. He tried to purchase Congress in the last election cycle. NRA members and gun owners across the country and across these key battleground states rejected it, said no. And he's looking to see if he has an opportunity to buy the White House. He has 11 mansions. He wants one more. He wants one in Washington, D.C., and he's determined to use his money to either buy it for himself or buy it for Hillary Clinton, his preferred candidate. And the bad news is they have a lot more money than we'll ever have. We know that. The good news is we don't have to match him dollar for dollar because he still only has one vote. And if NRA members and Second Amendment supporters across the country rally around this freedom, we will send him back to New York or wherever he flies on his jet, and we'll secure this freedom for our kids and grandkids. But if we don't because we didn't participate fully, and some of our friends sat on the sidelines because they didn't think their vote mattered, that their participation really made a difference, then that's going to be a sad day for America.
Absolutely. Chris, listen, it is always a pleasure getting a chance to spend some time. I hope we can do this again soon. And
I look
enjoy
forward
the Great
to
American
it.
Outdoor Show.
Absolutely. I hope everybody can come and join us in Harrisburg.
I do, too. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, buddy.
Chris Cox talking with us here on NRA News. Cam and Company still to come. Mr. Benny Spies, the host of Gun It with Benny Spies, had Rob come by just a minute ago. He dropped off this letter to the editor. This was in the Erie Times. Firearms are freedom. This was a woman named Debbie Hahn in Greene Township, Pennsylvania. Wrote in, as I step outside my home, I often hear the ringing sounds of semi-automatic firearms off in the distance. My first thought is not one of fear, but isn't America great? I feel safer and secure knowing my neighbors are well-armed and prepared. After all, isn't this the land of the free and the home of the brave, not the land of the oppressed and home of the weak? God bless America and our Second Amendment. Well, I don't think Debbie is one of my neighbors, but Debbie and I have something in common because I often hear that sound as well. And, it doesn't freak me out. It makes me very pleased to know. And actually, then I usually say, you know, I'm going to go do some shooting, too. Anyway, we are here at the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We were talking with Chris Cox just a couple of minutes ago about that anti-gun push within the media, anti-gun politicians, directed by Michael Bloomberg and his deep pockets. ABC News had a piece over the weekend, gun control not resonating as a key issue in New Hampshire. Now, keep in mind, again, the president has put a full-court press on the issue of gun control over the past couple of months. Hillary Clinton has said this is her biggest issue in her campaign. As a matter of fact, she's been trying to beat up on Bernie Sanders in the New Hampshire primary for being slightly less anti-gun than Hillary herself. Or at least that's her claim. Now, Bernie, he's hopped on board the repeal of the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. He's trying to prove that, no, he is just as anti-gun as Hillary Clinton. But we've been telling you this for weeks now, right? It doesn't seem like this is having much of an effect on Hillary Clinton to try to be the gun control candidate. It had no effect on Martin O'Malley's popularity. Well, it didn't help his popularity anyway, trying to become the pro-gun control candidate there in Iowa. I don't think he didn't even crack 1% before he dropped out. This ABC News story says that the gun culture is alive and well in New Hampshire. And with a population overwhelmingly familiar with and comfortable with firearms, gun control issues that have resonated across the nation barely register among voters getting ready for Tuesday's presidential primary. They quote Wayne Lesperance, a professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire. He said, quote, most folks in New Hampshire, I don't want to call them pro-gun, but they're comfortable with guns. Why don't you want to call them pro-gun? Because there are a lot of New Hampshire residents who are actually pro-Second Amendment. Again, not only are they comfortable with firearms, they understand that we have a right to own them, as a matter of fact. Kirk McNeil is the owner of a bar in Concord, New Hampshire. Grew up in the Carolinas, ABC News says. Spent a chunk of his adulthood in Michigan. Has called New Hampshire home for the past 7 years. Grandfather taught him how to shoot as a youngster with a shotgun in the backyard. He's carried on the tradition with his daughters, ABC News says, starting them with BB guns when they were in elementary school. Quote, I believe the first person responsible for my safety is me, he said. Well, good for you, Kirk, because you're right. you are the first person responsible for your safety. Gun issues, he said, are not something that he's considering when deciding who will get his vote. He thinks of it more as an issue for local or state politics than at the presidential level. Britta Terrell, a New Hampshire native, 34-year-old nurse from Concord, doesn't own a gun. Says she has no interest in owning a firearm. She says, am I into violence? Nope. But am I opposed to people having them, meaning firearms, for their protection? No. Asked where she ranks it in her thinking about the primary, she said, quote, it's at the bottom of the list. Now, we don't know. ABC News doesn't say if Kirk McNeil is going to be voting in the Republican primary or the Democratic primary. Don't know the same about Britta Terrell either. But what we do know is that despite, again, this extensive effort over the past couple of months, the CNN-style town hall event, President Obama holding the event at the White House to announce his executive actions, Michael Bloomberg and the anti-gun groups telling politicians around the country, it's not only safe to talk about gun control, Americans are demanding that politicians stand up in support of gun control. No, we're really not. Really. It hasn't moved the needle as a political issue. As a matter of fact, what we are actually seeing, again, are increases in concealed carry applications, for instance. We talked about Fresno County, California, last week. Most of the time, Fresno has about a month-long wait to get your concealed carry license. Since the attacks in San Bernardino, that wait time has grown to 10 months because of the demand. Minnesota, in January of this year, saw the most concealed carry applications ever in the state's history. There are now more than 200,000 concealed carry holders in the state of Minnesota. You talk with firearms instructors from East Coast to West Coast and everywhere in between, and what they're telling people is that their classes are filling up fast. They're having to add more classes. Demand is high. They're seeing a lot of people who are new gun owners. They're seeing a lot of people who have been gun owners but have not been concealed carry holders. And they are deciding, you know what, I do want to be able to protect myself. It is important to me that that these rights exist. And, in fact, I want to exercise these rights. That's what we're actually seeing on the ground. Again, it's a Monday afternoon here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And the Pennsylvania Farm Show complex is packed. When we drove in this morning... the doors open during the week, by the way, 10 a.m., 10 to 7. When we drove in this morning, it was a little after 9 o'clock, and there was already lines outside of every entrance to the Pennsylvania Farm Show complex. Folks waiting to get in. Again, that's the reality on the ground. If gun control is not resonating as a key issue in New Hampshire, I don't think it's resonating as a key issue anywhere else. What is resonating as a key issue to a lot of Americans is the erosion of our individual rights and the desire and the need to protect and secure and strengthen those individual rights. I think that message is what's resonating with more and more Americans, frankly. All right, when we come back here on this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, from the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, our friend Benny Spies, he is the host of Gun It with Benny Spies on Sportsman Channel. He's going to join us. Getting ready for an autograph session. Yeah, because Benny's got a crowd waiting for him to sign at the Sportsman Channel booth. But before he does that, he's got to join us here on NRA News Cam and Company. So stick around. We'll be back with more from the Great American Outdoor Show, our on-location sponsor again this year, Adcor Defense. We want to thank our title sponsor, Nosler, as well. Stick around. We'll be right back with more right after this.
I'm here with my good friend Bruce Pyatt. Competitive shooter. Bruce, okay, I have to do this interview and introduce you. So what do I say? Okay, here, look at this. Bruce, what haven't you done? NRA 2015 World Shooting Championship winner, five-time Bianchi Cup, NRA Action Pistol. I don't know. How do I introduce Bruce Pyatt?
Well, for 30 years I've been a police officer. I just retired. And the whole time I've been a competitive shooter. I started when I was a kid. And so I guess I'm...
You're Bruce Pyatt.
I guess.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Pyatt. What do I need to say? It's been quite a year for you and continues to be. We're going to talk a little bit about what you've done and what you have coming up. And first of all, let's step back. You said you're a police officer, just retired, and thank you for your service as a police officer. How did you get into competitive shooting from being a police officer?
Well, actually, I was a competitive shooter before being a police officer.
Okay, right? So how did that happen?
I started when I was a little kid, just shooting. I was bugging my dad to take me hunting. So what he did is signed me up for NRA small bore 50 foot at a local indoor range.
Good for him, because look what he did. He got you out of his hair, and look what he did for you.
Yeah. Well, I grew up right outside of New York City in New Jersey. There isn't places to shoot, so I had to start indoors. And as soon as the junior program's done, men would come in and shoot bullseye pistol. Well, all the kids would go home, and I'd be standing there at the window watching the men, and I wanted to shoot pistol so bad. You know, let me get in there, and sure enough, some of the men would let me come in and fire a few shots. And
that's cool.
Well, as soon as I could get my hands on a pistol, I was doing it. We had some family heirlooms, you know, from my grandfather. My grandfather had a bunch of guns. He was actually an active shooter. So as soon as I could get my hands on pistols, I was doing it.
And look at Bruce, how natural the mentoring process is. Even these are guys who weren't, or you know, their guys are in there shooting. They saw you had interest. They took you in and showed you how to do it. And dude, they lit that fire. That is so great. All right, so the 2015 NRA World Shooting Championship winner, that was an interesting competition. That was something new, right?
It was. This is the second year they had it. It's a very interesting format that they supply all the guns, they supply all the ammo, and it's 12 or 13 different disciplines. We shot everything from cowboy action to precision 22 rimfire, all the way to long range.
So it really was
power, everything.
And nothing against three gun, Bruce, but unlike three gun, this really was just the gamut of disciplines.
Every discipline, bullseye, handgun, everything. And you couldn't be good at one thing and win there. You had to be good at everything. We had aerial shotgun, you know, trap ski, everything.
I'll tell you, and I was talking to some of the competitors out there, and they had to keep the right attitude because there's some competitors who are really, really good at doing certain things. And they came in, and it's like, I can't do this very well. But if you let yourself kind of get caught up in that, it's going to tear you down at a thing like that.
That's exactly true. The guys that were good at IPSC or whatever their specialty was, they would push hard at that specialty and thinking that's going to help them along in the whole competition. And,
right.
And that really is not the case. You had to be steady and stable the whole way through.
Right.
You couldn't crash anything.
And stay with it. Speaking of Bruce Pyatt, all right, Bruce. So, okay, moving on, 2016. What you got a lot coming up. Once again, here's the schedule of stuff. And this is just a sampling, ladies and gentlemen, what's coming up for Bruce Pyatt.
There's more.
What are you looking forward to the most?
Actually, shooting-wise, in November, the World Bianchi Cup match is down in New Zealand.
Oh, nice.
Shooting is shooting. I like shooting anything. But to go down to New Zealand, it's a beautiful place. I've been there twice.
Would you like me to come and cover it for NRA News Camera Company?
I got a bag. You can carry my bag.
There you go. Boys, we're going to New Zealand. I always wanted to go to New Zealand.
Take the whole crew.
I'm going to say Bruce Pyatt told me to come to New Zealand. All right. So that comes, that kind of stuff like that keeps the fire going, I imagine. Keeps you into it, interested.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate my whole career. You know, police paid my bills, and my sponsors have basically paid for my hobby.
Mention
a few
of those sponsors.
Caspian Arms, I've been with them my whole shooting career. 29 years I've been with them.
Wow.
Sierra Bullets, Starline Brass, almost the same time. DPMS, Panther Arms.
Cool.
Burris Optics and H&M Black Nitride just came out with them. So
beautiful. All right, before we run out of time, how can we get more information about Bruce Pyatt?
My website, brucepyatt.com.
brucepyatt.com. Bruce Pyatt, what a guy. You're a great guy, and you're a great mentor. We love what you do, and we love having you here on NRA News.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Our on-location sponsor is Adcor Defense, and our guest this segment, who didn't realize that this was live until about 10 seconds ago, and thankfully you didn't have that microphone in front of your mouth when you realized this, Benny Spies. He is the host of Gun It with Benny Spies on Sportsman Channel. How are you, buddy?
Good, buddy. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure.
I'm glad you filled me in. This is live.
Yeah, right? Well, I kind of figured you
that
knew
was
that.
Smart.
We do the show live all the time.
I know.
Do you watch
I
the
know.
Show ever? Do you listen ever in the toaster?
Every day. The toaster.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I should do this for you. I should just
Looks familiar.
I should unzip a little bit. There you go. Look at that.
The Rooster t-shirt. I love it.
And I didn't realize when I put this on this morning, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to wear the t-shirt today. This is a pretty casual event. Yeah. I kind of like this event. Nobody has to get dressed up. And then I'm at a booth, and all of a sudden I get the call, Chris Cox, NRA ILE's executive director, is here on set. And I thought, well, now I'm completely underdressed because Chris Cox, I know he's going to be wearing a sport coat.
You look great.
He complimented me on the shirt. He liked the shirt.
Sure,
so
he wants
you've got fans everywhere.
Sure, he wants one, but he can't have one. You have the
this
only
is
one right there.
The only this is the only one.
You washed it?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
It must be me. Holy moly. Every time.
And this is supposedly a scent blocker, so that it must be you.
It must be
scent inhibitor.
Yeah, that just makes sense.
So this is your first time at the Great American Outdoor Show.
It is. This thing is huge.
It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
And this is like the size of South Dakota.
Do you know how many toasters we could fit in here? 8.5.
I think probably like 80,000.
Yeah, this thing is huge. There's a lot of people running around through here.
And you would think, I mean, like honestly, you would think, okay, so I'm going to go to an outdoor show. It's going to be a Monday.
Yeah.
Probably going to be kind of slow, right? Because people would have gone on the weekend. No, I mean,
it's not slow. It's not slow. How do you do the show right here, by the way? I'd be on squirrel every 2 seconds, looking over at people walking and watching. I mean, there's people everywhere.
Yeah, luckily, I can, you know, look and talk.
Concentrate.
I try to anyway. I'm not very good at it, but I try. I'm getting better every year.
I've never been able to.
So you...
you hear that?
Yes, we do have. We are over by the game calls
in right now.
So you do have a little bit of game call in the background.
You have camouflage, and I'm not wearing camouflage, so I'm going to flare them off.
That's all right.
Every time,
it happens.
Right.
So you were at the Sportsman Channel booth earlier today doing a signing.
Yes, sir.
Had a good crowd. You got a lot of fans.
Yeah, there was four people here: my mom, my dad, my brother, and the dog. So they showed up. That's nice.
Good.
I mean, they follow me everywhere.
It's nice that they still ask for autographs from you.
Yeah, they got
think they would have enough
of that.
Right?
Yeah. Well, the toaster's here, you know, too. You know, they travel in the toaster.
Yeah.
It's quite a journey.
It's
a family.
I would imagine.
You can move
pack
in.
Them up and
bring your 72 kids you have. I've been to the farm. I like it.
I know. And, I don't think we've added any more kids since you were there. I think
That's
we
good.
Still are at five, but.
Five's a lot.
Yeah, well, you add in the dogs and the all of the other critters. But, you know, one of the things that I like about your show is that it's just, I mean, it is. It's you. You are who you are.
Pretty much.
I mean, you really are.
Love me or hate me, buddy.
Right? And
here we are.
It depends on the day.
Yeah. Thanks.
Nah, I'm just teasing you. You know, there is no pretension. I mean, you're, in fact, on the side of the shirt, you can't see right now, but it's every outdoorsman.
Yes,
right,
sir.
Is what
yes,
it
sir.
Says.
Yes, sir.
And that's sort of your motto. I mean, your
yeah.
goal, right? You're
well,
not
yeah.
out there trying yep. to do the glitziest, most expensive hunts. You're just out there living the everyday life.
Just having fun, you know. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I love to do the expensive hunts, too. You know, if it's possible, I'll go on them, you know. But it's about,
did you airlift the toaster to Africa
the toaster
or
goes,
New Zealand?
Yeah, we just put it on a raft. Set it out there. Sometimes it makes it, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
You know, goes right back, hits the shoreline, crashes. No, truthfully, I mean, it's like, you know, it's the everyman, you know, kind of persona, you know, whatever, you know, it's just going out and having fun. You know, some days we shoot something, some days we don't. It's just telling a really good story and just kind of showing up the regular, everyday, every outdoorsman, regular Joe kind of guy that likes to enjoy the outdoors. So it's fairly simple, you know. I'm not as hardcore as most people, I guess. It's, at the end of the day, it's just about having fun. So
do you get grief for that, for not being as hardcore as other people?
I really don't. And you can see by the fans showing up here, a lot of them showing up saying, you know, Ben, you do it just like we do it. You know, you're just like one of us. You're like how I grew up hunting. You're like my dad, you know, my dad. You know, people say my dad, who's 85 years old, enjoys watching your show because you just hunt and fish just like we do. So it's really nice to hear all that stuff. So
how old were you when you started hunting and fishing?
Six. 6 years old when I started shooting, I guess.
Okay.
Four when my old man, that's cool. I'm happy you asked me this because it's kind of fun to talk about. Because when I remember when I was a kid, I would not sleep at night knowing I was going to go hunting with my dad in the morning. So I would have like all my coveralls, all my hand-me-downs, my boots, my gloves, everything laid out, ready to rock and roll, just waiting for my dad to turn on my light and say it's time to go hunt. I would not sleep. I'd just lay there. And I remember 4 years old, I mean, he'd take me out and I'd be, you know, retrieving the ducks. That's what I wanted to do.
What
he'd shoot
was
a
it?
Duck, it'd fall, I'd run and grab it. Then
what
we got a dog, and then that blew all that.
But you still got to wear the collar, so that was nice.
Well, the shot collar, yeah. I still, well, I took it off just for this interview, but I'm still wearing it.
And the ankle bracelet, but that's no.
Yeah, we'll
I'm just
that later.
So what was it that kept you up at night and made you so eager? Was it spending time with your dad? Was it getting out and just doing what you were doing? Was it the activity? Was it just the whole thing?
It was the whole experience that I loved. Spending time with my dad, my brother, my grandfather out in the outdoors, you know, duck hunting or, you know, pheasant hunting or deer hunting or walleye fishing, whatever it was just the fact that I'm going out there and experiencing this moment, this time with my dad, you know, and learning, you know, was a big part of it was learning what, how it all kind of unfolded, you know. And the anticipation, you know, I mean, when you're out there hunting, you never know when that big deer is going to come walking around the corner. You never know when that duck's going to fly over. 99% of the time I miss. But that's all part of it too, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, it's kind of the whole experience.
Well, you know, and I think as we see Americans, more Americans getting into hunting, you know, you
need to have more.
Well,
and more get into
right?
hunting.
But I think a show like yours is really helpful because it does show that, you know, look, you don't have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars of guns and gear. You can go, you know, wherever your backyard might be.
Yep.
You can stay local wherever you are.
Absolutely.
There are places and opportunities for you to hunt and fish and get out and
yeah.
enjoy the great
public
outdoors.
Land, you know. Get out there and enjoy it. You know, that's that kind of the whole deal, that every outdoorsman brand, you know, that's just kind of the whole essence of it. You know, just go out there and enjoy it and have fun and go and hunt and fish and enjoy the public ground and learn about it and experience it and go out there with your family and friends and like you and I should go hunting. Why hasn't that never happened?
I have no idea.
We've done 82 of these shows with you. We still haven't got it done yet.
You know, but here's the thing, and that's why. Because Monday through Friday, I'm doing this show, right? If I did 12 episodes of Cam & Company a year, or even 26 episodes of Cam & Company a year, I could go out and do more hunting. But yeah. I do five days a week, Monday through Friday, you know.
Life.
I know. I would love to go. So if I just took time off, if I took a couple of days off of work, where would we go? Where would you want to go hunting with me?
To the bar.
Okay. And then once we got through there and we had figured out where we're going to go hunting.
Yeah. Where would we go? We go shoot some South Dakota roosters, buddy.
Okay.
That's what we'd do.
Yeah?
Yeah. Right there. That's what we'd go after. South Dakota roosters. I'd put you at the end. I'd walk them right to you.
What's the season?
You'd shoot at them, miss. I'd laugh at you. I'm going to go have another beer. We're all set and down.
What's the season?
Whenever you want to come, Cam. You're a celebrity. You're big time. It doesn't matter.
No.
I'll tell my good buddy Cam's coming over in the Game Fish and Parks and say, let him have at it.
Really? I doubt that'll
Ideally,
happen.
Ideally, if you don't want to get picked up, I would probably come in October.
Okay.
Second week of October.
Second week of October.
For you to come over there. And for everybody out there, too, South Dakota pheasant hunting is the best in the world. You should come out there and check it out. There's millions of birds, a lot of shooting, a lot of good times.
Is there a particular part of the state that better than others?
You know, it kind of depends on what you want to go do, buddy. But I would say, you know, anywhere in the state. I mean, other than the Black Hills, a little bit different out there in the west. But there's plenty of places to go hunting. There's plenty of great outfitters out there to take you. There's plenty of public land to go hunting as well. And there's plenty of people like me that just let you tag along and shoot a few rounds of Winchester ammo.
There you go. Nice.
Snuck that in there.
That was Peyton Manning-esque of you.
Nailed it.
Congratulations.
Budweiser. I heard it.
Would you take me to...
See, you can let the cat out of the bag. Cam and I hung out last night and we watched the game together.
We did. With our crew here.
We had a lot of fun.
We did. A place called Aruga's.
A little watering hole.
Right?
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Down from the hotel there.
Right?
Had a couple cocktails, a couple pops.
It was an awful game, but it was fun.
It was a great game.
It was sloppy. I'm happy with the result. I'm happy with the result. It was still a sloppy game.
I'm a Peyton fan, so I didn't really care who won. I was going for Peyton.
If I get to South Dakota the second week of October, can we take a? How far away are you from Mount Rushmore?
Good question, buddy. Depends where I'm living at that time.
Well, if you're in the toaster, I guess you can be as close or as far away as possible, right?
Fly right into Rapid City, could be there in a heartbeat. A few hours. It wouldn't be hard to get over there. I've got experience Deadwood, too. That's one of my favorite towns out in that country. It's a good time.
Have you ever been to the Sturgis bike rally?
You know, as stupid as it sounds, no. I have not been to the rally.
Really?
Uh-uh.
Have you been to the Mitchell Corn Palace?
Yeah, a million times. How would you ever miss that? It's the Corn Palace.
I'm trying to think of what else there is in South Dakota. I would go see.
There's two things to do in Mitchell, right?
Yeah.
Corn Palace and Cabela's.
Okay.
What you do right there? Go to Cabela's first, go to the Corn Palace, go back to Cabela's.
Is the Cabela's
Around corn the themed at all?
Nah, it's rooster themed. And roosters like to eat corn. Huh. Put it together.
There you go. All right, second week of October. I'm going to try to make this happen.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on, bud.
Listen, anytime. And I know you got to go do another signing, but...
Oh, they're already lining up. No, that's not it. That's not true. That's not true.
When can folks watch Gun It With Vinny Spies?
It's a great question. Super question. We're a third and fourth quarter show, so it's going to be a little bit till we're back on the air. But you can always go online and check out things and check out the social media avenues and everything. We're always doing fresh stuff. And
what's your website? BennySpies.com?
BennySpies.com, yes. Not Gun It With Vinny. Benny Spies. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Spaced out right there for a second.
I understand.
Did I land the plane okay? We all right? We okay?
They don't let you drive the toaster.
No,
bus,
they
do
don't.
They?
No, they don't.
That's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Listen, I do appreciate you coming on the program. It is so much fun hanging out with you. You are, like I said, you are as genuine as it gets. You are who you are. There's no pretense to you, and you're a hell of a lot of fun, Benny.
I appreciate it, pal. You asked me to put that sticker on the toaster earlier, and I can, with the exception of a word on there, but we won't. Through that, you know. So I will, if you have
cover this up, right?
If you have a sticker you have to put on the toaster, no problem. But
yeah.
Anytime. You know, okay. I think we need a sticker, a picture of you. You know.
Just a little cam face.
Yeah, okay. Put it right on the door.
I do. You know, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you one of these. You can exacto out whatever part of this you need to exacto out.
I love
just
everybody.
Just leave the NRA News logo.
I love you. Love everybody.
But I did pick up a sticker from AmericanSnipers.org that I would like to donate to the.
Love it.
To the toaster.
Sure.
Can I
do
that?
Absolutely.
All right, fantastic.
You have it here? Where's it at?
It's in my coat. I'll get it to you during
your
the break.
Coat? You have your coat on. How many coats you wear?
I have two coats here.
You have two coats?
I have two coats here. Yeah.
You should be wearing the toaster or the rooster shirt, and that's it. You have a toaster shirt?
Yes, I do have a toaster shirt. And I wear it on occasion.
I take care of you.
You do.
What have you given me?
I don't have a line of clothing.
I don't either.
I have no cam swag. Help me out with that. Tell me how you get like your own personal swag.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Who designed this?
Like that's all through Cabela's, right there.
They designed the logo and everything.
Yeah. Well, no, the logo was actually done by an ad agency. But to be honest with you, when we were developing the Every Outdoorsman, you know, the brand and everything, I had a little bit of help with that. It was all my ideas. Kind of going back to that real second for 2 seconds. It was all my ideas, and then they kind of built some cool. Logos and everything off of that. So.
Okay, because see, I just try to draw the stick figures and then think can I do an iron on? Like I need help
either.
With the swag. So
I can't draw that. I always go to my brother for the drawings. So he's a pretty good artist, JoshuaSpies.com.
JoshuaSpies.
Oh, got to plug in for my brother too.
Unbelievable.
Ow. Nailed it. Who am I missing?
Winchester.
Hey, I'm on the TV.
Joshua Spies.
Look at
the There's
shirt. Wore the shirt for you too. By the way, put on my nice shirt, my Sunday shirt.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, buddy.
Hey.
That music means we're out of time.
Okay.
We'll see you soon. Vinny Spies, check him out on Sportsman Channel in quarter 3 and 4. We'll be right back with more NRA News Cam and Company live from the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, right after this. Speaking with Command Sergeant Major Patrick Valdez, he's retired, and he's now with Freedom Hunters. Patrick, thank you so much for being here, and we'll go right to the shot of what you tell us what you do, because this makes a very big impression when you wield this up to the set here. Tell us what's Freedom Hunters all about, and tell us about the chair.
Freedom Hunters, we're a nonprofit. We take all veterans, all wars, all branches, and outdoor shooting activities, to include hunting, target shooting, trap, long range. Whatever we can get the guy out. It started out with the Wounded Warrior program at Fort Carson, Colorado, and to get guys out of the barracks, kind of like what Healing Waters did. It's hunting and getting guys outdoors. When you get back from a combat environment, you want to go back and do the things you did before. You want peace, you want calm, you want quiet. And getting guys outdoors and gals is our primary mission.
So tell us about the chair you brought along.
The chair is an amazing device. It's the Action Track chair. It's an American-made. It runs 5 miles an hour. We can get guys, and I say guys meaning guys and gals, into places they can't get with a normal wheelchair. Little skinny tires get stuck in the mud, stuck in the sand. We put them in this, and we can get them right to a blind. We can get them to a duck or a goose blind. We've taken them elk hunting, mule deer out west. We've even taken them fly fishing. with it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it can go into a little bit of water, not a lot. Awesome. And it is battery operated. And it's just a great tool to get guys out. And it gives them independence. It gets the guys in a chair the freedom to get off the concrete and get into the snow, sand, dirt, whatever, and not have to worry about getting stuck.
So why did you do this?
You know, I started out as a patient in the program. I got injured in Iraq in February of 07, and Freedom Hunters came to me and said, when they were really small, they said, we heard you want to go do something different. And I'd never been waterfowl hunting, so they took me, and that's how I started with them. So I was initially a patient in the program, cool. Then I became a mentor. Now that I'm retired and have a little more time on my hands, I work as an outreach coordinator helping the guys out.
That's awesome. Talking with Patrick Valdez with Freedom Hunters. So, Patrick, I was out at Camp Perry one time at the Nationals there, and I knew exactly what you're talking about. There was another organization who worked with the wounded vets, and they got them out hunting and shooting. Those guys just, you know, it's what they grew up doing. It's why a lot of them got into the service to begin with, and they're just so happy just to be getting out there again and just being out with the guys. It's hugely impactful to them.
Well, it's an independence issue. You know, when they get back, they're well medicated, they're being taken care of, they have all of these appointments, and then they're like, I just want to go be by myself or get back into the wild. And especially at Camp Perry, it's a little sandy there.
Yeah.
And I've seen what wheelchairs do there, and they sink. And then all their buddies, usually four of them, drag them to the firing line. And I've been on hunts where we didn't have a track chair available, and we had to drag the guy in his chair up to a blind.
Yeah. So something like that chair can't be cheap. So tell me, I'm obviously you guys probably need support. So we've got about 30 seconds left here. Tell us about Freedom Hunters. How can people get involved? How can they help out?
Freedomhunters.org, first of all. Come to our site. Vets can register and to get on a hunt themselves. Landowners can bring opportunities to shoot. There's the Independence Fund that's available, and Action Track Chair has their own 501c3 where there are scholarships available or funding available to get a chair on your own.
Patrick Valdez, Freedom Hunters, thank you so much for what you're doing, and thanks for being here on NRA News. Please keep up good work and stay in touch, okay?
Welcome back. Hour 3 of NRA News. Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, and our on-location sponsor this year, Adcor Defense. In fact, I just got a text from Clint Romache, Medal of Honor recipient. He is on the ground here in Harrisburg. He is at the Adcor Defense booth. So if you're over at the Shooting Sports Hall, go by and say hi and say thank you to Clinton Romache, a Medal of Honor recipient. Now, coming up on the program this hour, we've got the Hero of the Day, sponsored by Adcor Defense as well. Deal of the Day, Good Guy of the Day, Chris Brackett of Arrow Affliction, presented by Mossy Oak and Outdoor Channel. Matt Moret from Zinc Calls, talking a little turkey. And right now, I want to welcome to the program. I'm very pleased. I would like to have new guests and new faces on the program. Katie Moyer is with us. Katie, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are a Pennsylvanian, right?
Yes, I am.
A local here.
Yes, I've grown up in Pennsylvania. I lived in Harrisburg my whole life.
Oh, really? So have you been to this show before?
This is actually my first year being here.
Really?
Uh-huh.
What are your first impressions?
There's a lot of camo.
Right.
But this stuff is really cool. I'm really enjoying getting to see all the different things they have.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, as you say, yes, there is a lot of camo. And this is, and that's funny because, you know, look, not every gun owner is a hunter.
Yeah.
Right? And frankly, not every hunter is a gun owner. We have bow hunters. We have guys who use crossbows. Gun culture. I hate that phrase because, to me, there is no monoculture of gun ownership. Mm-hmm. You've got so many different subcultures of gun ownership, from the hunters, the sport shooters, people who are carrying for self-defense. You know, there really is no stereotypical gun owner, mm-hmm. right?
Right, definitely.
So you wrote a piece at PennLive.com, which is the website for the Harrisburg paper here,
mm-hmm.
And it was all about letting students carry a firearm. Now, you just graduated from college?
I did. I just graduated from Millersville University.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And so was this an issue that you thought about while you were on campus?
It was. I didn't want to write about this when I was still on a college campus because it's a really hot issue, and I didn't want to upset anyone. But now that I'm graduated, I felt like it was time for somebody to really voice their opinion about this.
So you write about freshman orientation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you say during the freshman orientation at any of the Pennsylvania state schools,
mm-hmm.
Students are immediately inundated with information about the realities of sexual assault on college campuses. But are they presented with anything, any ideas about self-defense?
There are very minimal self-defense type of things discussed on campuses, like rape whistles, and it's encouraged to do self-defense classes. But I feel like on a state-funded university, like any of the Pennsylvania higher education campuses, you should be able to uphold your constitutional right to conceal carry to protect yourself.
Hey, you say you didn't want to write about this while you were a student.
Yeah.
Were you afraid of the grief that you'd get from students or faculty?
I was just, basically I was trying to get the courage to write about it because I don't really care what people say, honestly. But I think I really wanted to make sure I knew what I was saying before I put something out there. And I think that the more time I spent at my university, every semester there was more, there were posters that were saying about sexual assault where you could report it. It became a really big issue on the front page of Millersville's website. And I just felt like it was lacking a part of the conversation about how you can help yourself in those situations by being able to defend yourself.
You know, and it's interesting because a lot of the discussion that I've seen, a lot of the pushback to the idea of campus carry for women defending themselves against sexual assault, it seems to be, well, you know, a lot of this happens when people are drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you suggesting that, you know, women get drunk and carry guns around? But no, I don't think anybody is suggesting
right.
that. And certainly nobody is saying that a firearm is going to be available or ready in all situations.
Right.
But you know what? Not every sexual assault victim, not every sexual assault has alcohol involved.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And I think that, well, last year, during the entire school year, there was a sexual assault on my campus, there was a rape, and then there was a domestic violence murder on my campus. And
in one semester?
Yeah, no, one year.
One school year?
Yeah, so two semesters, there was a rape, sexual assault, and there was also a murder. And I just don't know what it would take to allow students to be able to defend themselves. I think that it's really scary as a female, that there are people that I cannot physically defend myself against. And I want to have every weapon in my arsenal to keep myself safe. One of the reasons that I wrote about sexual assault is because this is something that feminists talk about a lot. And I think that, why aren't we talking about being able to defend ourselves too? So the most feminist thing that I could do is be able to conceal carry to defend myself and not need anyone else to protect me. So I just really feel like that voice is lacking, especially among young females and on college campuses. It's a very biased perspective, and somebody needs to be out there bringing the other side.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and I appreciate you doing this.
Thank
and
you.
Talking about this because, you know, we do see, we've been following the issue of campus carry in Texas, where the lawmakers passed the law last year, goes into effect in July. You've got groups like at the University of Texas Austin, Gun Free UT. You've got professors who are claiming or who are saying they're going to ban concealed carry holders from their classroom. I mean, they've lost all perspective on this issue.
Absolutely.
And the idea of self-defense never enters their mind. It's all about, if somebody's got a concealed carry, a handgun on them, there's going to be, you know, shootouts in classrooms. People are going to get upset over classroom discussions. Now, they can't explain why there aren't, you know, fist fights right now over the same discussions. But they immediately, it seems, assume that college students, and maybe even some of the faculty,
mm-hmm.
Aren't mature enough, aren't responsible enough. And I thought you were an adult when you got to college.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right. Well, and I think that if you have that view that you should just hold it from college campuses, then you should have it that nobody should be able to do it with that logic. And
I think most of them actually do have that logic, well, unfortunately, but
and
you're right.
Unfortunately, that's just not how our Constitution is. I have a Second Amendment right to protect myself, and especially when you're on a place that is a breeding ground for sexual assault. That is something that is happening in high numbers on college campuses. It's a national issue, and I think within that conversation, we need to talk about how women can defend themselves, and students, I mean, everyone should be able to defend themselves.
So did you grow up in a gun-owning family? Was this something that... No,
really? I, I think I'm the first person in my family to own a gun, to be honest with you. Actually, the reason that I bought my gun originally was I started working downtown in Harrisburg, and on my first week downtown, I'm a very friendly person. I'm just walking, doing my thing, and somebody says, good morning, and I looked up and said, good morning, and it was a homeless man, and he followed me up the stoop to my office, and it was really scary. And after that, I was like, I'm not going to just allow myself to be that vulnerable. I want to be able to protect myself, and I want to feel safe, and I don't want to be scared. So that's why I bought my gun.
So that was the impetus. And then did you immediately, like, seek out training?
Yes.
And what was that experience? What was it like for you to buy a gun and to become a concealed carry holder without having, you know, any experience or any family member who could say, here's what to look for, here's what you're going to go through? Did you feel like, just, I don't know, tell me about the experience of actually going through this process.
Well, the first time that I ever had my hand on a gun was with my college Republican group. We went to a gun range for a fun outing. We wanted to go exercise our Second Amendment, right? And honestly, I was kind of scared of guns before that because I just didn't really know anything about them. My family doesn't hunt, and I don't think anyone owns one. But as soon as I got my hand on a pistol and I shot it, it was incredibly empowering. I just felt like I was a boss at that point. And so I knew that I had to, like, I don't want to have to rely on other people to protect me. I think there will be times when if I were home by myself, if I live by myself and somebody breaks in, I want to know that I can protect myself against somebody who's 6'5". You know, I'm little compared to that. So it's about empowering myself. That's why I wanted to get it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And have you had any friends or family members since you became a concealed carry holder say, hey, Katie, what can you tell me about becoming a concealed carry holder? Has anybody expressed any interest?
I have had a couple female friends talk to me about it. A lot of the people that I let in on that, I didn't tell a lot of people about it, but people that I did talk to about it were a lot of friends who were not 21 yet. So it was good that they could see me go through the experience of purchasing one and all of the things that goes with it so that I can be able to, like, help them in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so do you plan on continuing to speak up and speak out and be an advocate for this?
I would like to. I think it's a really important issue. It's not talked about, and it's a big element of the sexual assault conversation that's just not being had. So I would like to.
You know, and I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean, we saw at that CNN town hall style event,
mm-hmm.
Kimberly Corbin,
yes.
You know, who's a sexual assault survivor. She asked the president about his views on carrying firearms mm-hmm. for self-defense. And, you know, he kind of weaseled out of the answer, yeah. I think. Didn't really want to say, Kimberly, I don't think you should carry a gun.
Right.
Because that's kind of mansplaining, I think, right? But but that was, you know, he kept saying, well, you know, the studies say maybe you're better off not carrying a gun. The studies say maybe you're better off with that rape whistle, Katie, or vomiting on your attacker, you know, when a guy.
Pants is what they say.
Right?
Oh, gosh.
I
think that those are all valid things, and if you want to do those, you can do those, but for me, I want to be able to carry to protect myself. So if you feel like the rape whistle is sufficient for you, that's great. But for me, I want to be able to conceal carry. So we should have options.
That is awesome. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for coming here on the set and talking with us about this. Can't thank you enough for writing and really putting yourself out there. What has the response been in the paper anyway to what you've said?
There was a lot of negativity, but I expected that. I knew that this was kind of controversial, so a lot of people saying it was going to turn to the Wild West or that it was a great idea to give drunk people guns, things like that.
See?
Yeah, there was a lot of that, and it was just interesting to see the way that people reacted to it, because I think that if a 21-year-old anywhere else in Pennsylvania for the most part can conceal carry, then I should be able to, when I'm 21, as a knowledgeable and responsible gun owner and concealed carry holder, I should be able to do that on a college campus.
Listen, I'm right there with you, and it's interesting because the objections are so visceral and they're so emotional.
Definitely.
Right? Or drunk. Well, then can you drive on a college campus? Right? I mean, I've never understood that of, well, these students are just too drunk and they're all drugged out, so we can't let them have concealed carry licenses. You don't take away their car keys. You do trust them with their vehicles, right? Even though that's kind of an issue, too. Frankly, I don't think most college students spend their days in an alcoholic haze.
I don't think so either. At least not most of them.
Listen, I'm sure you'll find your partiers, but I also don't think that those college students who do spend their days in a drunken stupor, I don't think they're concealed carry holders.
I don't think so either. And I think the thing is that concealed carry holders, you need to be responsible and you need to be educated to be a concealed carry holder. And I think that just thinking that because of your age you're going to be so irresponsible is a little bit insulting.
Absolutely. You know, in Texas, when the legislature was having this debate, the heads of the university systems all sort of weighed in. Mm-hmm. And the head of the UT system said, oh, we don't like this idea. Same, you know, reasons. But the head of the Texas A&M system said, well, the system itself is going to remain neutral, but I'm going to write in support. I'm going to write a letter to the Senate in support of campus carry. And his logic was, look, we expect our students to be safe, mm-hmm. responsible, law-abiding people, whether they're off campus or on campus.
Right.
So this won't have any impact for anybody on campus other than, perhaps, again, an additional layer of protection. We're right. not asking them to be any different than we already expect them to be.
Right, yeah.
And we are talking about people, again, who are concealed carriers. We're not talking about a campus concealed carry license.
No.
We're talking about a concealed carry license. So
right.
people who are already law-abiding,
right.
they're already carrying off campus. It's simply a matter of saying your rights don't go away
right.
when you set foot in this location.
The other thing that it bothers me about not being able to conceal carry on campus is that there are a lot of older students. Like, I was a little bit of an older student. I'm 25. And a lot of veterans on the state-funded universities. Like, a lot of veterans. And I think it's insulting to think that our veterans who are back at school wouldn't be able to safely conceal carry on a campus. It just blows my mind a little bit.
is one of the things that we need to work on educating students about their rights?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Because it seems to me like we have a lot of students that are, I don't want that. I don't need that. That's fine. You don't have to exercise your
right.
rights.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't just throw your rights away because
Absolutely.
One day you might actually want to exercise them.
Right. Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think students really don't know their rights at all.
All right. Well, that's it's kind of a downer note to end on. Let's come up with one more question.
Okay.
So you are a concealed carry holder now, right?
Yes.
Do you have any plans on, additional training? Is this something that you want to continue doing and continue your proficiency?
Yes. I plan on taking a whole bunch more classes. I'm hoping to see if they have classes offered here at the outdoor show. I'm just trying to see what they have, but I would really like to take a bunch more.
Maybe one day you could be an instructor.
That would be fun.
How about that? Hey, Katie, listen, thank you so much for coming on the program. It was fantastic talking with you. Hope we can do this again.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Katie Moyer joined us here on NRA News Cam and Company. When we come back after a quick timeout, we'll get to our hero of the day, our deal of the day, our good guy of the day. Chris Brackett going to join us as well. So stick around. We have more NRA News Cam and Company from the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, coming up right after this.
We're here at the NRA annual meetings, and this is Joe Towers. And Joe, good to meet you. A group called Hero Hunt. I hadn't been here before. I haven't seen you in the Remington booth. You obviously have amazing backers, so congratulations. What is Hero Hunt?
Hero Hunt, Inc., we work with injured first responders and military guys, our police and fire and military folks. We're getting them back out in the woods and getting them back on the trigger and getting them back in restorative healing to come out and spend time with us and be with other people that understand what they've gone through and just get them back out in the woods and get them dialed back into to doing the things they like to do before their injuries.
You know, it's an interesting concept because I've talked to a lot of groups like this that focus almost, I think, exclusively on military. You're the first one I've talked to that also focuses on first responders. Very interesting, and of course there's a need for that, but talk about that need.
Well, a lot of the there are so many regulations with the HIPAA and stuff. You can't just call an agency and go, hey, do you have any injured officers? This is what we're doing. So we're trying to get our message out so our injured first responders know that there are people out here that care about them and that we can, that we're here to help them as well. I'm a police officer here in Nashville. My wife was an injured police officer in 2010 and had to take a pension. And people have lives, and you get lost in the mix, and people, hey, we'll keep in touch. We'll do things with you. And then, you know, people forget, and their lives take over. And these people, I feel like they were getting left behind, too. So we're just trying to reach out to them as well and let them know that we're here, and we're trying to get some stuff going for them as well.
When you help one of these heroes, one of these men and women, talk about that experience. Talk about, you know, what it feels like.
For us, there's no better feeling. I know we put a lot of time into this, and there are days, because we all have full-time jobs, so there are days where you go, I can't carry this load. And then you talk to somebody and go, hey, I think you may have saved my life. We've had we've had 48 people come through our program in 3 years, and I've actually had a couple of guys call me and say, hey, this was what I needed. I knew I wasn't being a good dad. My head was not in the game. I was so caught up in my world and what was going on with me. That because they come to our home and our farm, and I've seen how you and your wife interact and how you interact with your family, and a lot of our guys are our family members who are veterans and police officers, and I just realized I got to get it together. And you know, we've had a couple calls and go, hey, I'm having a bad day. So it's a great feeling. It makes everything we do worthwhile.
Where do people go online to help you out, donate money, donate maybe land? Where do they go?
www.herohuntinc.org, and we're also on Facebook at Hero Hunt Inc. At Facebook as well.
Speaking with Eric Lipp with NRA Refuse to Be a Victim. Eric, welcome back to NRA News. What is Refuse to Be a Victim?
Refuse to Be a Victim is the NRA's crime prevention and awareness program. It teaches folks to create a strategy and to know different options they have and things they can do to keep them safe.
How does the program work?
Well, it's a seminar, so one would go on, search our website, find a seminar near you, and an instructor teaches a 2 to 4 hour seminar, goes over everything from cybersecurity, home security, physical security, automobile, travel, you name it. It covers a lot of topics, and it goes from there.
So this is about being safe. It's not just about using a firearm. It's other strategies for being safe.
Absolutely. It's really doesn't involve firearms at all. We do cover some prevention devices such as pepper spray and other options that an individual could use. But a lot of it's more of, like I said, prevention topics. So what kind of locks you should use in your house, proper outdoor lighting, when to use the ATM. You know, do you go at night when it's late in a dark place, or do you go to say, I'm never going to go to an ATM. I'm going inside the bank and talking to the teller. So different lots of strategies and things you can do to just prevent ever being in a situation where you might be targeted. We have a big section on phone scams, email scams, text scams, you know, every scam known to man these days. And so we try to do alerts. You know, there's been a lot with IRS sending fake, or not the IRS, but people sending emails pretending to be the IRS, pretending to say you drove through a toll and didn't pay it, or you missed a credit card payment, all sorts of different stuff. And then now we also have social media, so different ways to protect yourself. You know, don't people tell people you're out of town, where your kids are going that day, all sorts of different stuff that we talk about.
How do you get more info?
It's really easy. Go to our website, refuse.nra.org.
Eric Lipp, thanks for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Our on-location sponsor, Adcore Defense, taking a look at some of the incredible taxidermy that is on display here at the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. My youngest daughter is getting more interested in taxidermy. I'm trying to encourage this, actually. I think that would be a fantastic career for my daughter, so I've been sending her pictures over the past couple of days about, look at this, look at that, and might even pick up an item or two here before I head home. There are all kinds of furs and pelts and skulls for sale at the various booths here at the Great American Outdoor Show. Really, there's everything under the sun. Now, we're going to talk with Chris Brackett from Arrow Affliction, presented by Mossy Oak on the Outdoor Channel, coming up in just a couple of minutes. But right now, I do want to get to our hero of the day, sponsored by Adcore Defense. It comes from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And, you know, we were just talking with Katie Moyer, from here in Harrisburg, a young woman who became a concealed carry holder, was very concerned about her personal safety. Well, at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, there is the story. Atlanta police says this guy had harassed a woman for days, assaulting her, coming to her home in the middle of the night. Authorities believe that just after 5 p.m. on Saturday, this woman in Atlanta killed her attacker. According to Atlanta police incident report, the man whose name has not been released was chasing the unidentified woman through a parking lot on the 500 block of Jefferson Chase Circle when he, quote, approached her in a manner that reportedly caused her to fear for her safety. The woman pulled a handgun, shot the man once in the chest, killing him. She remained at the scene. She's talking with the authorities. She's cooperating with the authorities. The police report says records indicate that the deceased had harassed the female by forcing his presence on her, striking her, and damaging property of the female's friends. In fact, two separate reports had been made over the past 2 days reflecting this activity. So over the past 48 hours before this guy approached her in the parking lot, he had forced his presence on her. He had struck her. He had damaged property belonging to her friends. The man, according to the police report, also went to the woman's home about 4 a.m. on Saturday, knocking on doors and windows before leaving. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution asked if charges had been filed in the case. Police spokesman says that the investigation is ongoing, but right now this looks like a case of self-defense. We will keep you apprised of any additional details that might change that. Right now, again, looks like a case of self-defense there in Atlanta, Georgia. Our deal of the day from Local News 8 and KIDK Channel 3 in Pocatello, Idaho. It's Idaho Falls, Idaho story, actually. Christopher Lee Derrick, part of an armed robbery, according to police, that took place back in January. He was arraigned last Friday on charges of felony robbery, felony use of a dangerous weapon, and the commission of a felony. Lengthy criminal history. In fact, Local News 8 says many run-ins with the Custer County Sheriff's Office. It's just one county. October 19th of last year, he was charged with trespassing, pleaded guilty, didn't get any jail time, got a $250 fine, $269.50. But that's not the first time, the news station says, that Derek had been involved in a crime like that. 2 months earlier, he was also charged with trespassing. He pleaded guilty, and a judge gave him a $564 fine. So the second trespassing charge, he actually got a lesser fine, even though it was 2 months later. I don't know how that works. Also, KIDK says that they dug deeper into his history, found it doesn't stop there. He pleaded guilty to a drug-related charge in 2012. In 2011, he pleaded guilty to domestic battery or assault in the presence of a child. In all of the cases, KIDK said he was required to pay a fine. There was no jail time. No prison sentence. It was a finable offense. Did he pay those fines? According to the Custer County Sheriff, no. In fact, Friday, February the 5th, the last day that Custer County allowed this suspect to contact the clerk's office to explain why he had not paid all of these fines. If he didn't, KIDK says the prosecutor was able to issue an arrest warrant. Now, the sheriff's office says that this guy is not a man who is afraid to go to jail. Previously, a judge had sentenced him to probation for a drug-related charge. After some time, he decided he didn't want to be on probation. Apparently, the suspect told sheriff's officers at the time he wanted to smoke marijuana instead. Instead of staying on probation, he decided to sit in the Custer County Jail for 343 days. I don't think he got to smoke any pot while he was in jail, but sounds like this guy, that's the only time, by the way, that this guy has spent any significant amount of time behind bars when he said, oh, I'm done with probation. And I imagine it's probably not the last that the criminal justice system has seen when it comes to Christopher Lee Derrick, our deal of the day. Our good guy of the day from WLTX.com. It's a story of an off-duty law enforcement officer in Casey, Texas, who saved a woman from a house fire. There in the town. Channel 19 with the story out of Casey, I'm sorry, I said Casey, Texas, Casey, South Carolina. According to a Casey DPS officer and public information officer, Sergeant Antley arrived home, El Feliciano was driving home. He's a master public safety officer. He was working the late shift and was leaving his home, run a few errands. He noticed smoke coming from a nearby home. So he approached the home and found the homeowner actually trying to re-enter the building that was on fire. He warned the woman not to enter the home. She went inside despite his warnings. He then went to his work vehicle, put on his firefighter gear, and entered the home to retrieve the woman as the home was beginning to be engulfed in flames. Because he could have called 911. He could have said, listen, fellas, I'm off duty, but there's a woman here who needs some help because she ran inside her burning home. That's not what he did. He acted, right? He was in the right place at the right time, and he did the right thing. Thankfully, he was able to rescue her. Neither a homeowner nor the Master Public Safety Officer suffered any injuries. The sergeant, who's the PIO for the Casey Department of Public Safety, said that this officer, quote, is such a nice guy, very soft-spoken and humble. You know, after the rescue, he went home, took a shower, and finished his errands. He just did the job that he was trained for. Well, he did, but he was off the clock. But that didn't matter to this officer. So, El Feliciano in Casey, South Carolina, thank you for being one of the many good guys out there. And still to come on the program this afternoon, we're going to talk with Matt Moret from Zinc Calls. But right now, I want to welcome to the show from Outdoor Channels, Arrow Affliction, presented by Mossy Oak. Chris Brackett's with us. How you doing, Chris?
How are you, bud?
Good to see you. Man. Good to see you. Having a good show so far?
Yeah, it's been amazing.
It's, you know, the energy and the excitement here. I mean, it's crazy because this is a marathon show, right? I mean, it stretches out over two weekends. You got an entire work week. And I kind of thought that today would see like a little bit of dip in the crowds.
Yeah, I planned on coming late this morning and sleeping in. And
right?
I looked out the window from the hotel and was like, oh, shoot, I better get ready.
The lines were already...
It was more full today than really, I think, yesterday.
I think you're right. Well, I think, you know, yesterday it was still really busy.
Yeah.
Saturday was packed here. You know, this is something that people look forward to every year, right? And so they're excited, and they've got their day or two
and
or three.
It's legit now. I mean, with NRA doing what they're doing, and you know, I just got done shooting here about an hour ago, and the whole place, there was 800 people in there, and everybody sat through, like, I was shooting lifesavers out of the air, and I couldn't hit one from behind my head, and they just sat there and just enjoyed everything and just, man, good shooting. And so, like, the environment is... so cool.
Right. Well, so you just mentioned something that we haven't really talked a lot about. I mean, besides the vendors and the exhibitors and the hundreds of outfitters that are here, there are all kinds of seminars that are taking place throughout the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex each and every day. So what were you doing?
Okay, so what they do is we do like a Fear No Evil, which is my other show besides Arrow Push on the Outdoor Channel. And we pretty much set up a live showing of the Arrow Affliction, kind of a live show, which is like a cross between a circus and a circus act and a Vegas act all in one, but it's with arrows and just highlighting the fact that anybody can do anything. And what I mean by that is I'm just a kid from Illinois that grabbed arrows and liked to shoot stuff. Next thing you know, I found out that I had this hidden talent of being able to push through whatever evil was kind of keep me from doing different things, and I would shoot aspirin out of the air and lifesavers and doves, ducks, geese, pheasants, and had this knack for shooting things out of the air. So I bring it here, you know, live, and for an hour a day we're shooting the big disc and we're shooting clay pigeons, and I back up to 35 yards and I'm shooting targets from behind my head, and people are just like, whoa. And I'm like, hey, you can do these things. It might take you like 10 extra shots or 100 or whatever, but don't be scared. Go out and push yourself, you know?
Well, that's the thing.
The message is good.
But, you know, pushing yourself, and that's the key, right? Like, you can't just stay comfortable.
Yeah, you can't be scared.
And you can't be scared.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to push beyond that. And I'm sure there was a little bit of work and a little bit of practice involved before you could hit an aspirin out of the air, right?
Right. Well, I hope so.
I would love
to say yes, but I can't spell real good, and I got a lot of things that I can't do real well. But shooting an arrow, I just thought, I wonder if I can do that, and I just instantly could. I don't practice a ton.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like I explain to guys, like, it's like a golfer. If you're getting ready to golf in a big tournament or you want to beat your buddies, you work up to that and then you kind of hit this plateau and you ride it out. So I don't try to practice all summer. I concentrate on my family and my food plots and stuff like that. But man, if I know I've got a big hunt coming up, whatever, I'll practice kind of ramping up and then cruise control, you know?
That is awesome.
So,
that
yeah.
is fantastic.
Yeah.
So, and you're right. I mean, I think it is. It's no different than any other sport in that regard, right?
No.
Can you overtrain? Is that something that can?
I believe so.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you can. I think you can get into your head a lot and not be able to do just kind of what you're gifted. And your mind's so powerful, and the will and the training, as far as, you know, you learn how to throw a ball when you were a kid with your dad. You just looked at his chest and threw it. You didn't aim it. So if you just stare at the target and shoot instinctively, you're going to be pretty close, you know. And so my job, is to say, come on, let's go. Like a coach, but a coach that comes into your living room three times a week and then goes, you know, come on and do this, but let me show you, you know, what I'm going to conquer for this week and take you on an adventure. And that's why I love television. I love, you know, the Sports Channel and Outdoor Channel and everything that involves. So.
And, you know, being at an event like this, you get an opportunity to talk with folks who are fans and who watch the show. And I imagine that you get some incredible stories from your viewers.
Yeah. I had a guy stop by the booth the other day, and he said, and he had a brain tumor. And he thought, dude, this is it. I was never going to walk again. He was told he's never going to walk. He's never going to do all this stuff. And next thing you know, he said, so he shows up. 2 years ago was when this happened, and he shows up at my booth and he said, dude, I just got to thank you. You saved my life. He said, I got my wife brought back the Arrow Affliction DVDs and the Fear No Evil DVDs from this show 2 years ago to him in the hospital, and he was walking around. One side of his face was paralyzed, but he's like, dude, that's it. He's like, I just watched your DVDs. You kept pushing me, and I wanted to get out there again and watch my son grow up and all that, and I don't care if I talk to anybody the rest of the whole time. That's the stuff that moves you. That's the stuff that, you know, my mom, being a school teacher for 35 years, she'd be proud of.
You know, there's this positive feedback loop, right, where, you know, you inspire folks, and then you hear stories, and all of a sudden now you're the one who's getting inspiration, right?
Yeah, it comes back, and then that's when you dig deep, like maybe on day 60 on a hunt in the hunting season where you're like, I'm not going to go, but you're like, I got to go. I got to persevere. I got to do this. And that's the whole underlying tone of the whole thing. And that's that positive circle. And that's what the country needs right now, let alone the industry. And we're all hunters, and we all hunt different ways. And I think we all need to stick together. And I'll go out front and, you know, take the brunt of it and say, you know, let's do this. You know? So whatever we got to do.
And
but
this
that's
is,
what it is.
You know, and this is really one of the few occasions where personalities like yourself get a chance to actually hang
get
out
the feedback,
with
man.
Other, not only with the viewers, but with other shows, right? With other hosts and other personalities.
Yeah, Lee and Tiffany are over there, and I mean, we've been friends from before any of us really, you know, were kind of winning awards or being noticed at this level. Man, they came and stayed at my house and shot flying fish when all of us just, you know, lived in the Midwest. And I still remember when Tiff was a stewardess on the airlines. And but we all got along then. We still get along, but we don't get to see each other because we go all our different ways, and we're trying to film shows, and so it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. So are you going to be here? How long are you
going to be
here?
I'm here all 9 days. I'm like a stormtrooper. I will weather the storm,
and
I will stay no matter rain, sleet, or snow. I used to be a mailman, see? So none of that stuff bothers me. But if I'm coming all this way, I'm staying for the fans all 9 days. Even if we run out of shirts, we run out of DVDs, whatever, it's about, you know, feeling the energy, finding out what they want to see, you know, coming up with new episodes and what their feedback is on their favorites.
I was going to say, so what kind of feedback are you getting? What do folks want to see more of that you're doing?
Well, I think the biggest one is that they just love the kind of the many layers to an onion, the humility of, like, who I am. Like, first off, most people, they either love or hate me because I speak the truth. And a lot of guys will be like, well, that's the most arrogant, you know, SOB out there, blah, blah, blah. And they spend literally 5 minutes with me and go, he lives for everyone else, but is not scared to tell you the truth. That's what I didn't know about him. And then all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, they're like, dude, I misjudge you. I'm sorry. And I'm like, hey, you didn't affect me one way or the other, because I have my sights set on this, and
right,
that's where I'm going. And if I'll show you the way of the promised land if you're part of my crew and whatever. And this is where I'm going. This is what God got me in line for, and this is where I'm going. And the cool part is, you know, I love getting their attention on television, them having good or bad things to think about me. Either way, they're still watching. Then they can come to a show like this, hang out as long as they want, no ropes or red tape at my booth, and they can just come on in and we'll talk it out. And by the time they leave, man, you know, it's more than just a fan, you know, hero mentality. It's
right.
Like, hey, he's just out there living for us. And you know, and the funny part is they'll come in and they'll go, you know, well, I like to meet my wife and, you know, kids. How do I get to do what you do? And I'm like, well, I don't have a wife or kids. I'm 38 years old, and I live in a small house because I have to pay for my leases and to kill all these deer. And I said, so it's all priority.
It's a balance, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, how hard do you want to work? You know,
as a father of five, I can tell you, you know, when you start looking at like, okay, well, how could I? Oh, I really can't.
No, because you're living for somebody else, and you're living for your kids.
Exactly.
I'm living for the fans out there, but I get to pipe it through. My dreams is shooting a Boone and Crockett deer, you know, or duck out of the air or whatever.
That's awesome, man. Listen, I appreciate you coming by this afternoon and spending some time with us. And you're welcome back anytime, brother.
I'm just blessed to be able to be here and do some cool stuff. And if I need a break from the booth, I'm going to sneak out and come back and
hijack
the show. So.
All right, man. We'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Chris Braggett joining us here. Arrow Affliction presented by Masioka. You can catch it on Outdoor Channel. When we come back after a quick timeout, Matt Moret's going to join us from Zinc Calls, talking a little turkey here on NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. And again, our on-location sponsor this week, Adcore Defense from the Great American Outdoor Show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Speaking with Bill Romanelli with the NSSF Project Child Safe. Bill, welcome to NRA News.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for being here. And what a great program, the Project Child Safe program. I absolutely love it. Tell folks, what is it?
Yeah, for those who aren't familiar with it, this is the firearms industry's safety program. It was launched in 1999 as Project Home Safe initially, and then it evolved into Project Child Safe. And it really operates along two central fronts. One is it's all about firearm safety education, primarily focusing on responsible storage of firearms when they're not in use. And then hand-in-hand with that, the other facet of this, and kind of the centerpiece of the program, is we give away free gun locks to police departments all across the country to hand out in their communities. And so far, we've given away 37 million of those locks.
37 million.
Yeah, it's been a phenomenally successful program, and it is something that the firearms community can be very proud of.
Wow, that's amazing. So how did this program get started and why?
Well, primarily it got started because it was an opportunity for the industry to step up and say, you know, we don't want to see firearms accidents happen. There's, you know, even today, unfortunately, too many stories of children finding loaded guns in the home and an accident resulting from that. And so this industry stepped up. There was a brainchild of somebody at NSSF to come up with this program to basically let's teach people what they need to know about proper firearm safety and expel some of the myths like, you know, a hidden gun is not a safe gun, for example. And at the same time, let's take away some of the barriers to safe storage by making these locks available for free.
And Bill, you're with the National Shooting Sports Foundation. People don't know that the NSSF is the industry, the Shooting Industries Association.
That's a trade association.
Yeah, trade association.
Industry, huh?
So you have done this, you know, working in concert with the, you know, all the different gun manufacturers. But NSSF has really taken a leadership role as this program has grown. Tell us, over the years, how has it grown and changed?
Sure. Well, we were very, very big program in the 2000s. We were getting a lot of federal funding through the Department of Justice to do the program. And that's where we had a lot of our biggest successes and where we, you know, were giving away most of the locks. Then in 2008, the grant terms expired and they weren't renewed. And so the NSSF on its own continued to fund the program for the next several years. And I am happy to say that for 2016, some of that federal funding has now been renewed.
Oh, good.
To the tune of about $2 million, which, you know, as we say, every $2 puts another lock in someone's hands. And so that will provide a lot of money for both making more locks available in communities as well as getting more educational resources out there.
And Bill, one of the things we all talk about is, as you mentioned, is safety is paramount. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you're at home, you're on the range, that's like, you know, the first order of business when it comes to, you know, the firearm, you know, using a firearm, whether you're hunting or shooting or at the range or whatever. So in some of the time we left, you know, what are some of the most egregious kind of safety violations you guys are aware of?
Well, you know, it's the funny thing. It's like when you look at the rules of firearm safety, number one, they're not rocket science. And number two, they really haven't changed since the firearm was invented. It's pointed in a safe direction, you know, keep it stored safely, things like that. And my personal opinion is I think that's why we have some of the accidents we do, is because the rules have been out there so long and they're so simple that we get a little bit complacent.
Yeah, and maybe take them for granted, right?
Exactly.
Which, when it comes to a firearm, you never want to take it for granted. So
that's right.
It's Bill Romanelli. It's the NSSF Project Child Safe. I love it. Bill, how can people get more information about Project Child Safe, about the National Shooting Sports Foundation? What do they need to do?
Sure. The easiest thing, of course, is going to go onto our website, which is www.projectchildsafe.org. We really would love people to, as individuals, sign up as supporters of the program. Also for organizations out there, retailers, shooting ranges, people in the conservation community. You know, we want as much help as we can get getting this word out. We don't rely on ourselves alone. We want to basically have essentially a team of messengers out there helping us get this message out there to the firearms-only community. And if I may, you know, it's something that I've noticed is that the firearms-owning community, the firearm community as a whole, you know, they're a very proud community. You know, they do not like being villainized or demonized.
Right.
And then, you know, they in fact focus on ethical hunting. They focus on responsible gun ownership. They're looking for something to be for and something that they can rally around. And this is a program that they can do that with.
That's awesome. All right, Bill, we got about 20, 30 seconds left. Once again, how can we get more information about Project Child Safe?
Sure. Go to www.projectchildsafe.org. If you're looking for safety resources, just click on our safety tab. Cool. Our entire library of safety resources is available there.
Beautiful. Bill Romanelli, the NSSF Project Child Safe, thanks for what you do. Thanks for the National Shooting Sports Foundation for what they do. And thanks for being on NRA News.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Welcome back to NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our on-location sponsor at Core Defense. And we are on location at the Great American Outdoor Show at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. News breaking here that Michael Bloomberg has stated for the first time that he is considering a run for the U.S. president. This has been telegraphed for weeks now. We've seen his pollster with a piece in the Wall Street Journal. We've seen advisors to a Bloomberg try to talk up how awesome it would be if the anti-gun former mayor of New York got into the race, how it attract a lot of moderates and independent voters. Now Bloomberg himself says that he was, quote, looking at all of the options regarding a possible presidential run. We'll be talking a lot more about that over the days and weeks to come, I am sure. But right now, I want to welcome to the program here at the Great American Outdoor Show in our set, Mr. Matt Moret from Zinc Calls. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great. I can't believe it's been a year already. Since
I know, right?
There. It's crazy.
How was the last 12 months for you?
Oh, it's been great. You know, we left the show here. Everybody's ready for turkey season. Got through a turkey season and and, you know, I'm noticing the older that I get, the faster the years are going by. That's the only problem.
Right. Are the turkeys getting any faster?
Yeah, I think the turkeys are getting smarter, to be honest with you.
So this is a show that that you kind of grew up attending, right?
It is. I came to this show the very first time with my father in 1975. And I actually watched a turkey calling contest that happened here. And, I, you know, at that point in time as a kid, those were my idols, those guys that were turkey calling and competing A couple years later, I was calling in the contest and turned it into a living, which is pretty unbelievable to me that I've made a living in the last 30-some years selling turkey calls.
Right?
Yeah.
And do you think that, I mean, it kind of sounds like the way you're telling the story, that this show played an integral role in your career.
It definitely did in my career. And if we look at even, you know, outdoors and outdoor television and all that, a lot of it started with a lot of the guys that started here. If you look at the turkey industry as a whole, especially, you know, some of the old timers like Dick Kirby, Ben Rogers Lee, some guys that are really the industry starters. And this show was so important to them, as it is today to the turkey industry, if you will.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, listen, we're going to have around 200,000 people walk through these doors and walk through the farm show complex, you know, between Saturday opening day and February 14th, the last day of the Great American Outdoor Show. And I think, you know, certainly as you look around, there are a lot of folks who've grown up hunting. They've grown up fishing. They've grown up around the outdoors. But you also see, I think, a fairly good number of people who didn't grow up hunting or shooting.
Oh, absolutely.
But now they are getting into the lifestyle.
Well, you know, I've been doing some seminars here at the show the last 3 days. And what's pretty cool is I always ask the question, you know, is anybody, this is going to be your first time turkey hunting? And probably get 7 to 20 people that are going to give it a try this spring for the first time, and that's wonderful. That's what we need in our industry, and they didn't start when they were 12, but they're starting when they're 20, 25, and, you know, it's never too late to give something a try, and we love to see that. And you're talking about Harrisburg and this area, just being from here, the coolest thing that happens every February is when the camouflage start to come to town, the jacked-up trucks, and the people that are really excited about what happens here at the at this complex.
Oh, absolutely. And you get folks from all across the state, but you get folks from all over the country coming to events like this. So I got to ask you, if somebody is going to try turkey hunting for the first time this spring, what advice would you give them? I mean, what are some of the things that they need to keep in mind as they're heading out?
Well, here's what I tell a lot of folks. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, come to an event like this and go talk to one of the manufacturers or some of the people that are here in the turkey business and learn how to use a turkey call. You know, you can spend as little as 10, as high as $100 for your first turkey call, but they'll all do the same thing. And, you know, with technology the way it is today, with get on the Internet, you can watch a hen turkey do a yelp, you can mimic her and go to the woods. It's not as tough as it used to be. Plus, we have turkeys all over the country, so we're in good shape there, too. So getting started today is a lot easier than it was 25, 30 years ago.
So you think do we have more turkeys now than we did 30 years ago?
Without a doubt. You know, through efforts of conservationists and DNRs and organizations, the National Wild Turkey Federation, you can't drive down the interstate anywhere in the country and not have a chance of seeing a turkey. We definitely have. Our population's better than it's ever been.
That's fantastic to hear. And again, I know that there's some people who, you know, are philosophically opposed to hunting, who would be shocked to learn this. I mean, how can that be? As the sport of turkey hunting has grown, how can there be more birds out there? Man, that doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, they were almost extinct at the turn of the century, and through conservation efforts of the biggest conservation effort was the trap and transfer program, where places that had a lot of turkeys, they took them from there and put them in places that used to have a lot of turkeys. And they flourished all over the country. And it's because of sportsmen that happens. And, you know, whatever someone's belief is what it is. But there's no doubt about it. If you look at a remarkable story of the wild turkey, it's true conservation.
So when you look at, like, the elk restoration projects that have gone on over the last couple of decades, they're taking a page from the turkey hunters and what happened at the turn of the century, right?
Absolutely.
This is not a new idea. It's a tried and true idea.
Correct. And, you know, just like the elk restoration program, Pennsylvania has one of the most successful ones. And, you know, there's not many people that get to hunt the elk, but there's tons of people that go and get to see the elk that maybe never get to go out west where elk thrive. And it's pretty cool to go to Benezet, Pennsylvania in September and hear an elk bugle in your home state. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, I can imagine. You know, we've got, I live in Virginia, and they've got about 400 elk now that have been transplanted from Kentucky that are in southwestern Virginia, and the numbers are growing. Looks like things are good. There's even talk of a limited hunt maybe within the next 5 years.
Oh,
population
awesome.
Will be big enough. And again, it's another one of those projects, right, where, you know, you don't think that you'd ever be able to see that again. You think that, okay, well, once a species is gone from a state, it's gone forever. That's not necessarily the case. And again, it's the hunters and sportsmen who are ensuring that these species return. That's the key.
It really is. And, you know, you said about earlier people that don't agree with what we do and all that. And when you really look at a hunter and a sportsman, you got to look at how much conservationists they are. They're people that care about the animals. I mean, we don't go out there and always have a gun in our hands wanting to shoot one. We care. We want to look at them this time of year when there's no season. And we want to help them get through the winter. And we want to make sure that the next generation that to come, that those animals are there for them to see. And I think that's a lot of times where there's a little bit of cloudiness in there. And when you truly care about something, you bleed it every day. And I think that this show is where I see it the most. People from this part of the world, they bleed, they care, they want to see white-tailed deer, they want to see wild turkeys, and they want to see elk. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, it's really cool. We've got about six wild turkeys that I've counted on our property right now.
Awesome.
And usually by the time I'm driving home, they're up in the upper pasture, and they're kind of waddling across the driveway. And as soon as I hit the driveway, they start waddling a little faster towards the wood line. And I'm looking, and it's so cool to watch these birds, right? And maybe we'll have a fewer, a little bit fewer come the end of turkey season. But it is, you're right. I mean, like, if you're a hunter, if you're an outdoorsman, you are, I think, a conservationist. You don't want to see the woods become sterile of all wildlife. You want to make sure that the animals that are there are healthy, that the population is sustainable, that it's growing. And frankly, you know, human beings play a huge role in ensuring that those things occur and take place.
Absolutely. If you look at the evolution of us as hunters and conservationists in the last 15 years and people buying their own land or turning their land into better places for wildlife to live through, you know, food plots or creating thickets or select timber, we're getting it. I mean, and we're getting it better than ever. And that's the positive thing for hunting in the future. I think that we really get what it takes to maintain the resource and to keep it going for the next generation. It's one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of. I mean, you grow up and obviously you want to shoot a big buck or, you know, you want to shoot a turkey. But, you know, as I'm getting older, I want to make sure that they're there for my children and their children to hunt.
Absolutely. So when does spring turkey season begin in Pennsylvania?
It starts, I think, April 30th this year here in Pennsylvania. You know, and, you know, we're on the edge. This show is always on the edge of where it starts in the country down south, you know, March 15th. So, you know, we're roughly a little over a month away. And there's a lot of people out here walking the halls that have fire in their breath. They're ready to get after them.
So do you fly south and then make your way north through the spring as seasons or as the states, you know, seasons start, you kind of make your way back up towards Pennsylvania?
We do. We start down south and, you know, we're filming for AVNX TV and we start filming down there. And by the end of the season up here in the Northeast, we end the end of May. So we end up here chasing these turkeys around. So it's kind of a grind, but it's a heck of a ride. And you get to see spring happen and start in a lot of different places.
That is awesome. Yeah, and you get the chance to just, you know, see the country and just, you know, we live in a fantastic place.
I mean, Heck yeah.
That is fantastic. Well, again, we're talking with Matt Moret from Zinc Calls and AVNX. And so where can folks find you if they're headed to the Great American Outdoor Show?
We're in the East Hall in the 3300 aisle, and it's the hall that has a lot of sound and noise. People want to stay away from it unless you love to deer hunt or turkey hunt and waterfowl hunt because everybody's blowing some calls down.
We've got a couple of calls near us here. Every now and then in the background you can hear some calls. But the East Hall, that sounds like the aviary, right?
That is. That is where if you were a turkey hunter or a waterfowl hunter, you're going to find it without a doubt. You'll hear it about 300 yards down from here.
That is awesome. Well, listen, man, I cannot thank you enough for spending some time with us. I hope you have a fantastic spring.
You too, sir, and I appreciate having us back. And we appreciate every time we get to gather with everybody that loves what we do, and we'll see you next year.
Absolutely. If not before then, Matt, thank you so much,
yes, sir.
Matt Moret joined us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Unfortunately, we are almost out of time on this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company. But the good news is, it's only Monday. How about that? And we will be back live from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania tomorrow as well, beginning at 2 p.m. Eastern on NRANews.com. You can check out the show on SiriusXM Patriot at midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific. Also on iHeartRadio, on demand, on the NRA News Roku channel as well. Here is a partial a listing of some of the folks that we'll be talking to on the program tomorrow. Wayne Motz is the CEO of the National Civil War Museum, which is actually located here in Harrisburg. I'm going to ask Wayne why it is that the National Civil War Museum is located in a city that didn't have a Civil War battle, but we'll talk with Wayne about that. In fact, there's an exhibit that is right now at the National Civil War Museum that was put on in part because of a grant from the National Rifle Association. Kyle Weaver, who is the NRA Executive Director of General Operations, will join us on the program as well tomorrow afternoon. We'll talk with Alicia Ketter with Legacy Defense. She is hanging out with Ron Bellin and Jeff Axelson in the Axelson Tactical Booth. But Alicia is a firearms instructor in her own right. She's got Legacy Defense that she's working with. And we'll talk again about what she is seeing in terms of the number of people and who is showing up to learn more, to become more competent and better trained and their firearm skills. Also, we'll chat with Michael Hunsucker on the program tomorrow afternoon, and Sean Luchtel of Heartland Bow Hunter. Bobby Gahan of the Pink Rack Project will join us on the show. And NRA board member Maria Heil from right here in Pennsylvania, among those who will be on tomorrow's edition of NRA News, Cam and Company. Plus, all of the latest Second Amendment news and issues of the day coming up on the next edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our on-location sponsor this week, Adcore Defense. Thanks to them both. Have a fantastic rest of your Monday. We'll see you here soon on NRA News, Cam and Company, from the Great American Outdoor Show.